Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. You know, it's funny, I'm just looking at my calendar, and my calendar's a mess. When you do radio, you know, people come, people go, you think about topics you're going to do, something in the news changes, and you look at it, and you go, what am I going to talk about today? Well, it's going to be a busy day. It's going to be a really busy day today. First of all, Angie Carter, who normally is on at 9 o'clock, and it's 7 o'clock here right now, in the beautiful panhandle of Florida, near the Gulf of Mexico, the wonderful emerald waters therein. And so it's kind of cool. I really like it here. You know, it's funny. Gavin Newsom talks about, oh, Californians, y'all coming back. And I was horrified. I thought to myself, wow, I spent 30 years in California, right? I thought, why would I go back? There's nothing to go back to. I mean, I left. When I leave a place, I leave. It's like, you know, same thing when I left Boston back in the 80s. I never going back. Well, I mean, I'll visit, you know, because it's kind of fun, although I think I've only done that once. California, I saw everything I wanted to see. Why would I ever go back? But it's just kind of interesting the way these things go. Anyway, so yeah, so California, good luck with that. But I love it here. I mean, it's really nice here. Rains all the time. You know, thunderstorms constantly, humidity. I don't mind the humidity. So life is good. Anyway, so I'm looking over my calendar and I'm looking at all this stuff that I was going to talk about. And this show developed rather interestingly. Again, Angie Carter, who did a few weeks of a regular report on campaigns, corruption, and what's her official report? I forgot what it's called. Candidates, campaigns, and corruption. Okay. Anyway, but she missed some of the Board of County Commission meetings, so she's now at the meeting, or is going to be at the meeting today, and so she'll be reporting every other week, so she'll get to attend the meetings and, you know, raise hell with them, and then come back here and talk about stuff the opposing week, which means I'm going to have guest weeks, so I'll probably have this time for guests or stuff I'm going to rant and rave about, or who knows what's going to happen. So anyway, I was looking through news and stuff and getting new Facebook friends and looking. I like to go through the someone you might know to see who might be interesting, and it's fascinating. And my old friends were like, you know, college marching band friends and people I'd known for years and years. And now, of course, with Action Radio, it's people that are in the political biz, you know, doctors, lawyers, you know, reporters, journalist folks, you know, all kinds of people like that. Campaign, you know, activists, party activists, doesn't matter who. So you generally, you know, so I'm filling my Facebook page with like-minded, you know, mischief makers. So it's going to be kind of interesting. So this is why you'll see a lot of posts, you know, now that I'm off restriction, which is kind of nice too. So for the next however many weeks before Facebook decides that I'm just a little too independent for their taste, I will be free of the restrictions. So let's have some fun with that. And so we've got today, we've got me for the first hour. Jonathan Mosley is going to start his legal report again. And that'll be in the second hour. He's got an article out in American Thinker. He's reporting on some January 6th stuff. And we have lots to talk about. I'm just sort of going over my notes here. The first one, there's a mysterious suicide. And, of course, you know how we feel about suicides around here, that there are very few that are actually suicides, especially if they're political in nature. And so, you know, January 6th particularly does not look like that's like Jeffrey Epstein. suicide. Oh, yeah, right. Sure. Well, yeah. No, I don't think so. But anyway, apparently there's another mysterious suicide of a January 6th political prisoner, which they're all calling rioters. You know, you look at any article, they all say the same thing. They're all in lockstep. They're all offering the same propaganda. This is rioters. Rioters. Well, what exactly were they rioting? I mean, did they destroy things in the White House? Well, I mean, a few doors and windows, but who's to say those weren't FBI people? You know, the FBI refuses to say. They can't. In fact, they when they went before Ted Cruz and I think Rand Paul, they couldn't say whether they were traitors or not. They couldn't say whether they caused the insurrection or not. Well, that goes to sources and methods. Okay, well, what are your sources and what are your methods? You know, I mean, we can't know that. You are, after all, a public agency conducting law enforcement, allegedly, FBI, KGB. And so it's crazy what they won't tell you. So anyway, so that's going on. So the fact that this is a suicide of somebody, you know, who was a political prisoner of the deep state for taking selfies in the Capitol building, which they want to turn into an insurrection while hiding the real insurrection. This is how you know there was the real insurrection was what happened below the Capitol. Because they're making such a fuss about what happened above the Capitol to maintain the distraction so that nobody asks what happened below the Capitol. Well, below the Capitol was the real insurrection, where they coerced, you know, enough representatives and senators to support Brandon being elected by, you know, Mike Pence and Chuckie Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy, the deep state leaders. You know, so they went around and found enough people to change their vote from challenging the electors in the battleground states, Arizona, New Mexico, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. So they found enough people to overturn that, so they didn't have to worry about a challenge. So there was no challenge. There was no challenge to the states like there's supposed to be by the Constitution. So January 6th effectively has never happened, which is why Brandon's not president. You know, okay? He didn't win anyway, so he wouldn't be president anyway legally. But the truth is that January 6th was never done properly. They could have done January 7th, 8th, 9th, or any time, but they never did. So, you know, hey, sorry. Brandon, it was never officially those challenges didn't go through. Oh, yeah, they took votes and said, oh, no challenge. I mean, I don't know how they did it exactly. So, no, nothing here, nothing to see. But because of the fact those votes were coerced makes them illegal, okay? So the fact that hundreds of representatives, and I think 147 still voted against Brandon because they wanted the challenge, and 12 senators, which is not enough. I mean, they were outvoted. So the real coup is taking away the challenge to the states to challenge their electors and to put forward Trump electors when the Brandon ones were obviously illegal. I mean, the mountain of evidence is overwhelming, so I don't have to go over that with you. But that's the problem. And so, of course, now they have to get rid of the witnesses. You know, this is what happens in a coup. You know, the first people to get killed in the coup are the people that did it. All right? But in this case, they got to get rid of the witnesses. We know who did it. You know, pretty much everybody on that January 6th committee is a coup leader in one form or another. And of course the big four, Nancy Pelosi, Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell, and Chuck Schumer, you know, the deep state, the leaders of the deep state. And so the fact that this person, you know, committed suicide at 47, why? What? Because they're facing 6 months in jail because they were imprisoned illegally. That emboldens people. That doesn't make them commit suicide. Okay. You put me in jail for 6 months unjustly. Do you think I'm going to be depressed? No, I'm furious. I'm going to be screaming and yelling every day. I'm going to make their life miserable. I'll probably get undue torture just because I'm going to make their life as miserable as they're making mine. You know, I'm going to fight back. I mean, psychological warfare. Hey, listen, I got a lot of experience, you know, with the way I grew up. So psychological warfare and I are no strangers. It's not a problem. I drive insane. You know, and I do that enough with my listeners. So, but, you know, put me in prison. They'd want to throw me out just to get rid of me, which is kind of interesting. But we'll see what happens. Anyway, no, I shouldn't joke about prison. It's not a joke. And what's going on there is an atrocity. The fact that these people are still in prison. And where are the geldings? Have the geldings stood outside the prison saying, open, you know, Mr. Who's the head of the Justice Department? Who's that horrible man that was that they wanted on the Supreme Court? I've forgotten his name. Mr. KGB head. Open these doors, you know, open this gate. You remember when Ronald Reagan was there at the Berlin Wall? Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Tear down this wall. It was a great speech. Well, I mean, you know, Trump should be outside, and so should all the Republican geldings. They should be outside the D.C. prison every day saying, open the doors. Let the people out. You know, let my people go. I mean, if I can quote Martin Luther King, well, I can because this is a civil rights violation. That's what it is, right? Anyway, so that's what's going on. So I'll talk to Jonathan more about that. I've got a theory, too, I want to put forward in this hour as well for you to think about. And I have noticed a distinct lack of concern on the Democrats as to this upcoming midterm election. And I've noticed way too much, you know, from the Republicans, you know, just give us the majority. Just elect Republicans and everything will be fine. This is what we'll do after we're elected. Well, you know me. I don't care what you do after you're elected. I want to see what you're going to do before you're elected. All right. And before elected, they've let the 2020 election go. They let the 2018 election be ruined. And the Democrats flipped 7 House seats in California, thus giving the Democrats the majority when it was actually a Republican majority in 2018. Okay. Now, I was off the air for reasons beyond my control during the midterms, but I would have screamed bloody murder because I knew it was a fraud. It was pretty obvious. I got an article on that too. Took a lot of articles on vote fraud going back to 2018. Of course, it goes before that, but the really bad stuff started in 2018. 2016 was great. We actually beat the vote fraud. I'm not sure how, but they should have kept doing that. Anyway, so the Democrats stole the House in 2018 by overturning 7 already established Republican victories. And they just changed the voting. So, we found more ballots. Recount. you know, ballot harvesting, right? So they made up ballots and they overturned 7 seats. Well, surprise, surprise, all of a sudden the Democrats have a majority and the Geldings never challenged it. All right. So this is why I have no faith in the Geldings. They are not going to win. Well, they may win in November, but they're not going to govern. No, they're going to hand power back to the Democrats because that's the deal. I mean, they made that deal a long time ago. You look at Ronald Reagan, the aberration, and then they get George Bush the elder to make sure that Ronald Reagan, you know, his conservative policies stop right then and there. And so George Bush shares power with the Democrats and then dutifully loses. You know, and so then we get Clinton. Was it Clinton after that? Let me see. Reagan, 80 to 88. George Bush, 88 to 92. Yeah, Bill Clinton. So the agreement was George Bush would have such a horrible administration that Bill Clinton would come in. So you get 8 years of a Democrat socialist. All right. And then Al Gore wants to run, you know, but they thought, well, he's not that popular. Let's get a rhino transgender Democrat, you know, George Bush, the younger, to carry on the failed policies of George Bush, the elder. Right? So this is how this works, right? So your choice is no choice. Now, your choice is between a transgender Democrat, otherwise known as a rhino, and an absolute Democrat, socialist, Marxist. Well, that's not a choice. But that's the whole idea. The whole idea is not to give you a choice. So that's why 20 conservatives all run for the presidency, and then the one moderate rises up, and the party goes behind the one moderate and says, well, this is the only person that can win because they're the moderate. You know, John McCain, he's the moderate. He can win. So he dutifully loses to Barack Obama. Next election, you know, Mitt Romney, he's the moderate who can win, and he dutifully loses to Barack Obama. I mean, this is how the pattern works. And then, of course, we get to 2016, and where Jeb Bush was supposed to dutifully lose to Hillary Clinton. Well, it didn't work out that way. Okay. Trump comes in and changes everything, just like Ronald Reagan changed everything back in the 80s. Right? So Trump comes in, changes everything, shows that America can be a great country, can be a free country, can have energy, can have prosperity, can have a good foreign policy, a limited military, not be at war everywhere, put tariffs on China, and do all the things, and seal the southern border. I mean, Trump proved, despite all opposition, that everything that he said he could do. All right? And so we know he could do it. So now we're all spoiled. The conservatives are all spoiled because we know what the country can look like. See, that was the biggest problem for the deep state. They want us to forget Trump. They want us to forget that we can be a great country in a very short period of time, just like we can be a ruined country in a very short period of time. But they don't consider that a problem. So story goes on. You know, we get Trump wins, obviously, and then they have to defeat him. So they brought in COVID, mail order ballots and ballot harvesting and fraud and, you know, secret counts and, you know, all the stuff, ballot stuffing and the drop boxes and recounting of the same ballot, you know, 1,000 times, you know, all for the same candidate, Biden, you know, to make sure that Brandon stole the election in the 6 critical urban areas of the 6 critical states to give Brandon the illusion of victory. All right. See, the real electoral count, if you take the Trump electors, the legitimate ones, is 316 to 222. So Trump won handily that election. We all know that. But what's fascinating is that what's going to happen now. So you know, so given the fact that you know the Republicans handed power to the Democrats, even though they won the House in 2018, okay, by 7 seats, they handed 7 seats back and then promptly handed the House to Nancy Pelosi, who then impeached Donald Trump. Okay. So none of those impeachments were legitimate. I've said this the whole time since 2018, the 2018 election was stolen. The Democrats never had the House. They took it. And then the Geldings let them. And that's how they're the enablers, right? So we got 2018, Democrats steal the House. 2018, they steal the whole Congress and the presidency in 2020, all right? So we know how that works because not only did they steal the presidency, you know, from Donald Trump, they stole the House and the Senate. Now, here's the weird part about the Senate. The Senate, the senators are 50-50, okay? What's her name? Kamala Harris is not a member of Congress. And the way the rules work, the majority party in Congress controls the Senate or the House. Well, there is no majority party in the Senate. It's 50-50, 50 Republicans, 50 Democrats. But Mitch McConnell, being a gelding, gave power to Chuck Schumer, saying, oh, well, I guess Kamala Harris, when she comes in to vote, she's actually, you know, she can break a tie. Well, that's great when she can break a tie, but there's a lot more that goes on in Congress than tie-breaking votes. There's all the committee hearings, the investigations. You know, the meetings, the lobbyist stuff, all the things that they do, the discussions, everything that happens in Congress, you know, especially the committee hearings, both investigative and bill and authorization and appropriation and budget and everything else, all those hearings should have been done by joint committees because there are 50 senators and 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats. But Mitch McConnell, the gelding, handed power to the Democrats. Okay. So you anybody seeing a pattern here? Okay. So they handed power over in 2018 when they didn't have to. They won. They handed power over in 2020 to the entire government. They handed power over in the House with stolen seats. They handed power over in the Senate by saying that Kamala Harris was actually part of the Congress when she wasn't. And they let Brandon steal the White House. Now, who's to think it's going to be any different in 2022? Because they're saying exactly the same things before the election. They're saying, we're going to win. We're going to change things. We're going to have investigative committees. We're going to have oversight. Well, you could do that now. You could have your own January 6th committee outside of Congress. Fund it themselves. You don't have billionaires out there to set up a hearing. So every member of the Republican committee that should have been there on the January 6th, that would be Jim Jordan, pardon my Congressman Matt Gaetz, and a few other folks, why haven't they had their own hearing somewhere else? And brought in Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro, Donald Trump, testify before them, called the real January 6th committee. They didn't do it because they're geldings. See, they're not going to take any action. They're just going to get your vote and ask for your money. But they're not going to actually do anything because that's not how the deal works. They've already made the deal. They've already made the Faustian bargain. You know, they get to exist at the whim of the Democrats. This is how this works. So if you think the Republicans are going to – I mean, the Republicans may win in 2022, but they're going to find a way to get rid of that victory as quickly as possible and hand power over to the Democrats. I've got enough articles to prove it. I've got Pianki's on the line. I'll get him on in just a second. But the thing is, I looked it up last night and I thought, okay, so the Democrats aren't worried about this election whatsoever. They're still pushing the policies they know we hate because that's their agenda. So the only reason they could push the policies that they know we hate is because they don't care how we feel. And the only way they could not care how we feel, this being a midterm election, is because they've already rigged the results. And they've already worked with the Republicans. They've already made their deals. It's all done. You know, so even if the Republicans win, it's going to get overturned somehow. They're going to be ballot fraud, ballot cheating, mail fraud and ballot harvesting. And they can do whatever they do. And all of a sudden, they're going to find a bunch of ballots November 4th, whatever the day after the election is. And they say, oh, see, we won again. You know, and the Republicans will go, oh, yeah, okay, fine. We'll get them next time. And that's where we are. So I have absolutely no faith that the gelding transgender Democrats party. I should start calling that the transgender Democrat party. I like that name, actually. I just label the whole thing. It's going to do anything different this time than they did in 2020 or 2018. Pianki, what do you think?
You're absolutely right. I have to congratulate you on that one. Republicans are nothing more than a bunch of pussycats. That's all they are.
Well, I think if you know, you've already dropped the word cats, but I know what you mean. Yeah, exactly. They are not leading. They are not doing anything. They could be at the southern border every day. You know, you remember my idea said if they really wanted to have some fun, they should be at the southern border handing out cards. Don't get too comfortable. Trump's coming back. I mean, that'd be the fun thing to do.
And the thing about it, they could have their own January 6th hearings.
Absolutely.
They don't have to go follow behind the Democrats because what the Democrats doing really don't amount to a hill of beans. So
well,
the Republicans can hang out there.
Yeah. So they could have had this. So the oversight they say they're going to do after the election, they could do right now. You know, all the things that they say they can do, they could do right now. They could be holding public debates right now. They could have daily talking points right now. They could be reporting illegal alien crimes and call them Brandon crimes right now. They could do all these things right now. And the fact that they don't do them now proves to me that they have no interest in leading. None. They can do what they've always done. Make a big show before the election. You know, get a bunch of people's hopes up. I'm trying to think of a good example. Some of the promises, you know, some guy wants to ask out this babe, you know, like the hottest babe in town. Oh, I'll promise you this. I'll promise you that. We'll tour here. We'll go to Paris. We'll do everything. Just go out with me. All the guy wants is like a good time for the night. You know, there's lying and cheating. So I see the Republicans that way. You know, they want to take you away for the night, but they're not going to give you anything. You're just going to get screwed. that's probably the closest political, you know, metaphor I can think of at this particular point. But they'll promise you everything. They'll promise you the wedding ring. They'll promise you the ceremony. They'll promise to be loyal and faithful for the rest of your life. But really, they just want a quick one night stand. I think that's appropriate for the transgender Democrat Party. So, what do you think? I think I'm on kind of a roll here.
Well, yeah, and you got the people the same way. You got people coming up with all kinds of excuses why come something can't get done.
Mm-hmm.
Why come you don't have your own power? You're worrying about getting smacked upside the head.
Yep.
It's a shame the way people have turned into nowadays. What's the one guy that his neighbor smacked him, broke his ribs? Oh, was that Paul Ryan?
No, it's Rand Paul. Rand Paul, the neighbor.
Rand
came
Paul,
in
he's another one.
Mm-hmm.
He's another one. There's no efforts right there. There's nothing to be scared of.
His questions are 2 years late. he's still asking the Wuhan lab. Okay, we had Bill Gertz on the show back in 2020, early 2020. We knew about the Wuhan lab. So by the time Rand Paul is asking, it doesn't matter. He's asking that because he knows the answer already. See, the geldings, the transgender Democrat Party, will not ask a question that it isn't already too late to ask it, where it doesn't matter, where there's no consequence to asking it. You know, it's like when they said, we're going to, overturn Obamacare, when Obama's in office and he's not going to veto that bill. I mean, he's going to veto that bill. There, nothing's going to happen with it. And now it's so entrenched that they don't even talk about it anymore. And it's a crazy situation. I just don't think they're going to do anything. I think they're going to, this is going to be another, I'll promise you everything and, give you nothing, just like they always do. Because the fix is in. I think the fix is already in.
When you look at what's going on, I was looking at the recalls of Arizona had a lot of recalls. California has about 200 or 300 recalls. But the thing is that these counts, the Arizona, where is it now? Where is it going? Same old narrative.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they elected.
See, if the Republicans were Democrats, they would be saying every single day, Trump won 316 to 222. That number would be so ingrained in people's heads. It'd be automatic. Everybody would know that the Republicans won, that Trump won 316 electors to, Brandon's 222. Everybody would know that number. Now, how come I'm the only one that knows that number? Well, I looked it up. I took the Trump electors, and took away and disqualified the Brandon electors and gave a new total. If Trump comes on the show, I'm going to ask him, why aren't you saying this every day? All these things that could be done. And they don't. It's just they don't. He could be announcing this at the rally. They could be announcing the illegal alien. This should have a page, the illegal alien, Brandon's illegal alien crime count. Or they could have the cost of Brandon's illegal aliens on like the national debt clock. I mean, there's so many things they could do that they just don't do because they're not interested. And they're going to push Mike Pence. Mike Pence is next in line. He's the next Jeb Bush. So Jeb missed his chance, and they don't want to run another Bush again because there's just too many Bushes, and so they already had Bush the elder, Bush the younger, and Bush the low energy is not going to get anywhere. So they're going to push Mike Pence. I mean, Mike Pence is already pushing Rhino candidates in the election. So the problem is there's two Republican parties. There's the America First Party of Trump, and then there's the transgender Democrats under Mike Pence and all the other weenies. And that's the problem. So Republicans are once again going to fight each other. You're going to have a bunch of conservatives and one, and Mike Pence will be running against all the conservative candidates who are going to try and challenge Trump. Trump's going to win. But if it wasn't for Trump, you'd have the same situation again. He'd be the next Mitt Romney. All the conservatives would cancel each other out like they always do. And the party would say, well, we have to go with Mike Pence. He's the moderate. He's the best one to win. And then, of course, Gavin Newsom becomes president. I mean, that's the deal. See, the only reason they had to cheat in 2020 is because Trump won. Once you've co-opted the Republicans, you don't have to cheat. The only time they had to cheat was when they had someone that didn't play the game. Well, so that's plan B. So you either arrange it so the Republicans have no power and they play the game, and that works. And if that doesn't work, then you got to steal the election. I mean, that's pretty much how this is going. Anyway, I got a couple of articles here. Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I got time. You can go ahead and feel free to comment.
No, I'm just
going to
say both McConnell and Turtle both are disgusting.
Mm-hmm. I think McConnell is the turtle. I'm not sure what they call Chuck Schumer. Anyway, let me. So I was looking up the last couple of days. I sort of get this idea, and I've had this for a while. That we've talked about this on the show. That why aren't the Democrats changing a policy? Why aren't they doing something? Why aren't they concerned at all? And we talked about this. We know why. Because they figured the fix is in. So I wanted to get some specifics. So I got this up from the Western Journal. This is Dick Morris, who I'd love to get on the show now that I think about it. I got his email address. We'll see what we can do. Dick Morris, how Dems stole 7 House seats in California. This is from 2018. So December 3rd, 2018. This is right after the November of 2018, the midterm elections that the Democrats stole. Here's how they did it. It was written by Dick Morris. Okay, there we go. That's right. Okay. On election night, the Republican Party lost 26 seats in the House. A serious erosion, but not a catastrophic one. But 2 weeks later, 7 races that had been called for Republicans switched, and the Democrats were certified to have won. All 7 were in California. No surprise there. and no seats moved the other way from blue to red. GOP incumbents, Representatives Mimi Walters, Steve Knight, Jeff Denham, Dana Rohrabacher, I recognize that name, and David Valadao lost their seats and the districts formerly represented by Darrell Issa and Ed Royce, both Republicans, Democrat. The state's Democrats engineered a massive piece of legal fraud to jimmy the results. Here's how they did it. And this is Dick Morris, a former Democrat, right? He used to work with Bill Clinton. He says, California sends ballots to every voter before Election Day, whether they request it or not. All the voter needs to do is fill in his choices and mail the form back. But if the ballot is not received by Election Day, it can still be counted if a sealed, completed ballot is dropped off with elections officials by hand and the voter does not have to come to drop off their ballot in person. Okay. This is where ballot harvesting comes from. All right, it says in 2016, California Governor Jerry Brown opened the door to fraud by signing a law allowing anyone to drop off a ballot for another person. This gave rise to a new practice known as ballot harvesting, in which the Democrat Party canvassers visited people who had not voted on Election Day and collected their mail-in ballots and turned them in on their behalf. So in other words, they're collecting ballots after the Election Day. All right? I mean, how much more illegal can this get? It says this year, a record 250,000 people voted by having someone else turn in their vote by mail ballots. Well, that's enough to throw an election, especially if you have the right areas. Anyway, it says, were the voters bribed to vote at their door? You know, here's a pack of cigarettes. Or were canvassers paid more for each vote they harvested, which is also illegal? It says, apart from these questions, the practice of ballot harvesting makes a mockery of the idea of Election Day. Democrats have long pushed for early voting to make the franchise more convenient. But Brown's law essentially extends Election Day for weeks if party operatives are willing to go door-to-door to harvest votes. As a result, voters not sufficiently motivated either to turn out on Election Day or to mail in their ballots beforehand get to vote just by finding their mail-in ballots and handing them to the guy at the door. See, this is the problem. We've got this strange attitude, Pianki. You know, I'm going to ask you about this, that we figure that in order for the vote to be successful, absolutely everybody has to vote. I think that's a bunch of nonsense. Voting is voluntary. Yes, it's
no,
a right.
You're right.
Yes, it should be
everyone
protected.
Everyone don't have to vote.
But no, they don't have to vote. If you're not willing to go to the polls, stay home. We don't have to make it so easy for you with mail-in ballots and drop-offs and things like that, because all they're doing is creating fraud. But there's no reason. If you're a good citizen, you're gonna go to the polls on Election Day. Right? Now, I used to vote by mail for the simple reason that I figured if I had to work that day or something happened or, you know, car broke down or whatever it was, I'm going to make sure my vote gets in. So I'd vote by mail a lot of times just to make sure it got there. But that's not a good enough reason anymore. So I changed that. Now I vote at the polls. I've been doing that for a few years now. So I vote at the polls. But a lot of times what I do is I go to the poll with my mail-in ballot. So here's my mail-in ballot. You know, they'd scrap that one and toss it out, and then they'd give me another one. It's like, okay, fine. And that's the one I'd fill in. But I'm not going to do that. You have to vote at the polls. And again, for those very few people that can't make it in, I can see absentee ballots for them. That's not a problem. But if you're that old, if you don't know what's going on, if you can't get around, it shouldn't be a crime, or at least an imagined crime, for people not to vote. If you don't vote, you don't vote. You know, same thing. It's like the Second Amendment. Nobody says, well, everybody has to have a gun, otherwise the Second Amendment's not effective. You know, got to make sure everybody has one. Well, we'll make them tax deductible, you know, because I want to do that too. You know, but if imagine if guns were treated like ballots, where they can send them in the mail to everybody that doesn't have one. It'd be kind of interesting.
This old cliche about somebody died so that you had a right to vote is a bunch of bull crap.
Yeah.
And what you hear. They show up at these doors with these absentee ballots, and the first mm-hmm. thing out of their mouth is, we got to get Trump out. That is the calling card. So
yeah,
that is the criteria by which people choose. It's not about the issues. It's not about America first. It's about this silly notion, we got to get Trump out.
Yeah, I mean, you think people would notice that the country hasn't been in this kind of good shape in the last 100 years. I mean, Reagan was pretty good, but Reagan had some budget problems. Reagan didn't do all the things he said he was going to do. He did some good stuff initially, but he got co-opted by the dark side of the force and, you know, made problems for himself and for the rest of the country. Trump did really well, too, until he let his bureaucrats run over him. And Jonathan's going to talk a little bit about that in the next hour. But, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing, you know, the vote is sacred, but it doesn't mean you have to exercise it. I have no problem people staying home. I have no problem people saying, you know what, I'm a beer-drinking, sports-watching, you know, I play golf on the weekends. I work hard. I don't want to vote. Okay, cool. Don't vote. No problem with that. If you haven't studied the issues, if you don't know what you're talking about, do us all a favor. Stay on the golf course. You know, stay away from the polls. Don't go. Maybe we should start a non-vote campaign. You know, in fact, it's interesting that the most responsible thing that people can do who don't know the issues is not vote.
Well, yeah. Some states, they pay you to vote. Missouri, you get paid for, you get 3 hours off, 3 hours off of work before the polls close, and you get paid for that time.
Well, see, that's not a bad idea.
On your
team. See, and I agree with that, because nobody should be denied the vote simply because they have to work all day. And their bosses, who are so arrogant, so ignorant, so stupid, that they would say, oh, your job's more important. If you leave to go vote, you're fired. You know, I mean, that's voter suppression. So I don't mind that. Of course, I'd rather have voting on like a Saturday or a Sunday, or it should be a, you know, National Election Day should, you know, two times every 4 years, that the election should be, the November elections, the midterms and the presidential election should be a national holiday. You should be able to do it, you know, and go vote. Make it like a Monday. Everybody seems to like Mondays off. You know, so go vote. You can read your voter pamphlet over the weekend, vote Monday. If you don't vote Monday, you don't vote. End of conversation. Whatever results are counted by midnight.
Before you graduate from high school, you got to know the Constitution. All those things need to come into place. As civic responsibility, that's a must. Mm-hmm. As civic responsibility, that is a criteria that you have to live up to,
mm-hmm.
to prove that you know what it is that you're supposed to be standing for.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, do we make this a law, or do we just make it peer pressure? You know, I mean, if you start making it a law or a condition or a voting test, then you're going to run into just a whole lot of problems and objections. But if we have the attitude in this country that if you don't know the issues, you don't know the Constitution, for God's sake, stay home. Go away. Don't vote. You know, then that's going to make for a better vote. And I'm sure there's fairly equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats that don't know the issues. They just don't.
You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right. And that's a shame.
You know, probably the best informed voters are the independents, because they don't get that card from the party. They don't get the voting plan. They actually have to think for themselves. So I say have more independents vote. That's probably a good idea. I'll probably be better off, get a better vote. So the quality of the vote is not the amount of people that vote. It's the amount of informed people who vote. That's what makes a good election. We need to start talking about that more. All right. Anyway, I think we've got this article here. As a result, here we go. So just the remainder of this article from Dick Morris. It says, so what the Democrats did was they looked at the election day returns. This is after the Republicans had won these seats in California, and then targeted those districts they lost, but where the margin was close enough that victory might be snatched from the jaws of defeat by a little ballot harvesting. They flipped 7 seats, and now the California delegation to Congress is largely devoid of Republicans. Couldn't Republicans have done the same thing? Of course they could have. And they have only their lethargic and old-fashioned local party leaders to blame. But the Democrats, by inventing ballot harvesting, have pulled a fast one and gotten away with legal fraud. Well, actually, it's illegal. Fraud's illegal. So, yeah. But that's how they do it. So that's how the Democrats stole the 2018 election. The Republicans won, and yet they gave away power. They didn't care. Didn't care to win. Didn't care enough to win. So why would you vote for a party that doesn't care enough to win? Now, granted, I've re-registered Republican for the sole purpose of voting in the primary. The day after the primary, I think it's August 23rd here. August 24th, I'm going to go back to my voter registration place and say, nope, you know, go back to the Senate, because I don't want my name on the books as a Republican. Screw them. Bunch of geldings. But around this area, there's so many Republicans, if you don't vote in the Republican primary, you know, the general doesn't matter, because Democrats don't generally win the general election. So the only question around here in Milton, Florida, near Pensacola, is which Republican's going to win. So that's why you have to vote in the primary.
Well, your decision on your vote should be on the issues.
My vote is on the issues. But if I don't register as a Republican, I'm not going to get to...
Unfortunately.
There's so many primary votes, those are the ones that really count.
Your candidate or who you choose should be on the issues that they're bringing forth, especially if it's issues that you go to them and say, this is what we want to see.
Yeah. 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 I'm still trying to get my Congressman Matt Gaetz on the show here. Anybody who opposes him, Rebecca Jones, the Democrat who's running against him, you know, come on the show. Let's talk. I want to talk to everybody. I've got another article for you here. Newt Gingrich wrote this June 7th, which would be the day after D-Day anniversary, 2020, at noon. Voter fraud is real. Here's how Democrats want to steal the 2020 election. So here's the other problem I have is that everybody knew how the Democrats were going to steal the election. And yet the transgender Democrat Party let them do it anyway. For those that are just joining us, the transgender Democrats are the RINOs, formerly known as the Republican Party. Anyway, so here's an article. So Newt Gingrich writes in June 7th. This is before the Republican nomination. Now, they don't even know who's going to be. Trump was leading. I think we had Ted Cruz and some other folks were trying to get the nomination. But they hadn't even decided that Trump was the nominee of the party yet. And Gingrich is already saying, you know, in June, you know, July, August, September, so it'd be 5 months before the election. Voter fraud is real. Here's how the Democrats want to steal the 2020 election. So he actually outlines how they wanted to steal it. In fact, this is exactly how they did steal it. So everybody knew, and yet they let them do it anyway. That's why the Republicans are geldings. Gingrich says, make no mistake, voter fraud is real. Democrats, the media, and the so-called public interest groups on the political left will tell you otherwise, but they are either lying or totally ignorant. Well, I think they're lying. Voter fraud is a threat to the integrity of our elections, the heart of our democracy, which is actually a republic, and Democrats want to make the problem worse with their new voting laws. He says, I believe this issue is incredibly important now more than ever. So, as part of my ongoing Election 2020 podcast series, I've decided to examine voter fraud in depth. He says, my guest is Hans von Spakowski. I love that name. I want to say that sometime to him. Hans von Spakowski, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, which is a rather useless organization that has yet to back Action Radio, my words, and manager of the think tank's Election Law Reform Institute. He's one of the preeminent experts on election law. Okay, let's just enough of the puff piece. He says, anyone who denies the existence of voter fraud in the U.S. needs to go to Heritage's an online database where they will find 1,285 proven instances of voter fraud, including 1,110 criminal convictions. Which, that didn't make the news, you know, 5 months before the 2020 election. If people had known that there were 1,285 proven instances of vote fraud, including 1,110 convictions, that might have made a difference. He says some of the stories are quite striking. In 2016, for example, Albert Melton, the former mayor of Gordon, Alabama, illegally notarized two ballots without witnesses' presence while running for re-election. Melton won the race by only 16 votes. Many local and state races are decided by such small margins. He was convicted of absentee fraud, removed from office, and sentenced to 1 year in prison. The biggest way to expand voter fraud is to expand voting by mail. And Democrats want to impose universal vote by mail across the country. So you get the idea how this works, right? Mail fraud, ballot harvesting. You know, then it says traditionally citizens can request an absentee ballot be mailed if they have a valid excuse, physically sick or disabled. You know, the troop station abroad. Of course, troop station abroad, they should count the ballots at the base. We've talked about that before, too. Anyway, so you know what the problems are. So Gingrich, which he just put it all out there. He says, this is how they're going to do it. This is how they're going to cheat. And then, of course, they did. It's a big article. I don't know why anybody was surprised by this. I wasn't. I don't know if you remember this. We had General McInerney on the show. Remember when I was lucky enough to get him on the show? He told us about 3 weeks ahead of time, here's how it's going to go. Trump's going to be leading until about 10 o'clock. Then everything's going to shut down. Then they're going to come back and recount when everybody's gone. And by the next morning, Brandon will be the winner. Remember do you remember that show? I've still got it. I could post it.
I don't remember that one.
I'll write it down, make a little note to myself. Repost McInerney show. McInerney. You'd be amazed at the folks that have gotten the show, and the folks that are going to get on. Well, actually, something I forgot to mention earlier. It's kind of cool. There was a webinar this weekend. And the webinar had all the greatest doctors. It's Right Doctors in History, Dr. Ben Marble, Dr. Jim Thorpe, our local Dr. Deborah Viglione. We had Dr. Pierre Corey was on. We had a bunch of folks I didn't recognize, but they did have I got to talk to Pierre Corey. That was really cool. I'm going to get him on the show hopefully soon too. We talked about that on the webinar. But one of the folks on the show was a reporter for Gateway Pundit, Alicia Poe. And so we've been chatting too. Hopefully she'll be on the show too. So my hope is if we can get a major reporter for Gateway Pundit, that they're going to do a story on us. And once there's a big story on us and our citizen legislation, things are going to get very interesting around here. So there's a little side note. I'm very optimistic that we're finally going to break into the national press. People are going to get what we do here. They're going to hear what we do here. And it's going to be very interesting when that happens. So let's, I'll give further details as I can, but you know, we're chatting. We'll see what happens. All right. See if I've got more stories here on how they're cheating. Tea Party. Tea Party PAC. Here's how the Democrats plan to rig the 2022 election. Here you go. So Tea Party PAC, something. Let's see if I can get you a date and an author. I don't see one here. Maybe it's at the bottom. Nope, come on. It's probably these big articles. It's copyright 2022, teapartypack.org. No date. We got a comment going back as far as April. So this has obviously been a few months ago. Not too many months ago, though. Look back at the top. The article says, Tea Party PAC, something that you might notice is that when GOP-controlled state legislatures go about setting congressional districts in a manner that benefits Republicans, well, the radical left in this country screams and hollers that this is gerrymandering. Most people don't know who gerrymander was, but he was a real person. And disenfranchisement, among other things. However, when the folks – disenfranchisement, I think it's probably how you say it better. This is, however, when the folks in the Democrat Party participate in the very same kind of activity, no matter how badly it's done, well, to them it's just redistricting. See, this is how it works. The Republicans gerrymander, the Democrats redistrict. All right, you all got that? It's no biggie. Then it says, at that, dear readers, it's likely how the Democrats, who are in control of both the House and Senate, along with the White House, are likely planning to try and rig the 2022 midterm elections in their favor so they do not lose control. This is what I say. I mean, I've got like I've got nine articles on different aspects of how the Democrats are going to cheat in 2022. I mean, does anybody doubt that they're going to cheat? That's why they're so confident now. And yet the you know, be interesting to start calling them out. You know, if I had a million listeners, I did this show the way I'm doing it now. You're being pessimistic. You're not helping, Greg. You're not helping the party win. Well, I'm not here to help the party win. I'm here to help us win. Back to the article. It says, you see, that's the whole mess what the 2020 presidential election was really about. It says, if they could manage to pull off massive voter fraud, if they could end up getting away with it on a national scale, they could pull out all the stops and prevent fair elections from ever happening again, ensuring they stay in power indefinitely. In other words, good night, America. And this is what I've said before, too. I said, there will be no 2022 election or 2024 election until they fix the 2020 election. I say it. I've been saying it since 2020. I stand by it. There will be nothing good that happens in this midterm unless they fix 2020. Bianchi, what do you think?
You're right. It all goes back to one source, people. People let this stuff happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have more faith in the states. I think it's going to be interesting when Carrie Lake becomes governor of Arizona. But there's another thing going on, too. The Democrats and the media and the deep state are trying to divide the Republican Party. They're saying, Trump can't win. Better vote for DeSantis. DeSantis can win. And so I put the poll question on my Facebook page. You know, is it Trump or DeSantis? Or is it Trump then DeSantis? I mean, that's the question we should be asking. But they don't want it that way. They want DeSantis in now. So, well, we can't have Trump. Although Trump is the single best – the fact that they don't want Trump this much means that Trump is the single most effective person to get the country back where it was before. But – and here's the big but – he has to get rid of half the federal government. He's got to fire a whole lot of people. If someone doesn't give him a document, that whole department gets fired. If they delay something, they all get fired. When Mark Milley called China his counterpart, should be immediately fired. You know, I mean, Trump should take his own advice from The Apprentice, start firing people, like lots of people, like half the federal government, at least. That'd be a start. Interesting morning. I'm going to take a break here in a couple of minutes, and I want to get to play my Santa Rosa piece. I haven't made mine one yet. Things have been so busy. The webinar was huge, by the way. So So a whole lot more folks know about Action Radio. A whole lot more very interesting people know about Action Radio. They know about our bills. And because of that, we're going to start to make a whole lot more impact. People are starting to notice what we do. I think we've kind of, you know, made that transition. And that reporters are looking at us. You know, then soon, I'm sure, national and international news websites will be looking at us. And the stories are going to start coming because people are sick of the problems. They want solutions. And the only place really that has solutions, as arrogant as it sounds, I hate to say it, but it's us. We're the only game in town with solutions that are legislative ready. They can go right to Congress, right to committee hearing, and right to vote. And I don't know if anybody else is doing what we're doing. So, you know, that's where I see this. All right. A little more on this article, and then I think I'll play something. This is just in concluding. It says a report from Western Journal talks all about the left's new strategy for trying to rig the election in their favor, saying, and if you're the type that gets outraged at nakedly cynical redistricting, egregious is the only word that can be used for the map New York State Democrats have drawn up. While the state currently has 19 Democrat representatives and 8 Republicans in the House of Representatives, the new map will have 20 Democrat-leaning seats, 4 Republican-leaning seats, and only 2 competitive districts, according to an analysis by 538. I have no idea who they are. But that's another way these things are being done. Bianchi, have you seen those maps of those like amoeba districts? A little bit here, a little bit there, kind of flows in and out. And it basically creates either a liberal district, creates a black district, creates a Hispanic district, you know, all in the interest of creating a voting block for a quote, safe seat for a particular, you know, I don't know if they have LGBTQ seats, but they probably do. You know, probably safe seats for the different Democrat constituent groups. So that's what it looks like they're doing. Anyway.
It don't do no good.
Yeah, enough of vote fraud.
It's different thing. New York have only had 1 recall since 2009. That's about as corrupt state you can get. New York.
Well, that's interesting.
Illinois. They corrupt.
Yeah. So I got some more news.
Mississippi don't even allow recalls. South Carolina don't allow recalls.
So how do you appeal a bad vote then? Or do you? I guess you just don't.
I tell you what, I don't know. And you know the funny thing about it, you know who is the head of the January 6th committee? Benny Thomas, guess where he's from? Mississippi.
Mississippi, yeah. Well, he's got a long established leftist record. Was he one of those guys that was pretty decent during the civil rights and then sort of lost his way and became an authoritarian Democrat?
No, he was a member. He was either a member of or pro a insurrectionist, separationist organization, Republican of Africa.
Separationist. So in other words, he wanted a separate black nation within the United States?
5 southern states to be turned over to black people.
So what are you going to do with white people like me? Where are we supposed to go?
I was going to wait for you to send me a letter telling me what happened to you.
Yeah. I ended up in white America, you know, Minnesota. It's too cold for me. Yeah, but that's such a fascinating concept. And why would 13% of the population of this country get, you know, 5 southern states? That seems pretty ridiculous. So this is kind of interesting now. I don't think we've ever explored this. So how is this new Africa nation supposed to work? That we're going to have passports and borders? Were they going to have their own military? Were they going to have their own taxes? Or do they still want taxes from the white people? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
It's usually the case, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, is it reparations too? Well, it'd be interesting to see.
I mean,
go ahead.
When you think about it, Greg, things are so messed up.
Yeah.
It's baffling. They are really messed. You know, your idea about limiting, taking the power of Congress away from them to borrow money is an excellent idea.
Well, thank you. I'm not the
excellent
first.
Idea.
Thank you. I did a little research. I'm not the first to think about this. Thomas Jefferson actually gets credit, quite honestly. He was the one that said we should not put this in the Constitution. However, there is no active effort to actually do about it. I read a couple of articles that basically said, yeah, this would be a good idea. Okay, well, that's not good enough these days. You know, and now we've got a constitutional amendment, a viable constitutional amendment that the states can pick up. Of course, Congress isn't going to. They're not going to take away their power to borrow money. The last place it's got to come from the states. Now, I'm not sure how that process works. I'm going to talk to Jonathan about that. He'll be on in the next hour. Can the states start without a convention of states, without a constitutional convention? Can the states initiate a constitutional amendment? That's going to be my question for him.
The states should be able to do whatever the heck they want to. That's where it began. I was reading some article where they was going to ask the question, should the courts allow states to recall their elected federal representation?
Now,
what kind of a dumb question is that?
Well, no, actually, look where that comes from, though. Because people think that the courts rule. They think that the courts make rulings. They don't. They issue opinions. The only thing the courts can rule on is deciding an issue between two parties. And the Supreme Court, same thing. If the Supreme Court, you know, the president says, I'm not releasing these papers to Congress because it's executive privilege. And the Supreme Court says, yeah, you're right. That's executive privilege. Congress, you know, Congress gets stuff. Well, that's decided by an opinion. Congress says, no, we think we should have those papers. And the Supreme Court says, you know, you're right. That's not executive privilege. That should be public knowledge. Hand the papers over. And the president has to get stuff.
If you depend on the courts and if you depend on the federal government, then why do you have local elections at all?
Yeah. Now, because people believe, and this is one of the biggest problems, is that people believe that the courts interpret the Constitution. Well, you don't interpret anything. You read it and you use it. You know, and this idea that the Second Amendment, remember people say, we got to get the Supreme Court to rule on the Second Amendment. Why? Second Amendment supreme to anything the Supreme Court could do. You know, and people don't understand that. The courts don't – this myth that the courts interpret the Constitution and tell you what the law says. No. The law says what the law says. Read it. Most of these laws aren't that tough.
Do people understand who the militia is? The militia is the people.
Yeah.
Not the national – the people is the militia.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my contention on the Second Amendment – I'm going to talk to Amber about this. I think she's missing this week. When we get to the Second Amendment – there's a clause in the Second Amendment that says a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state. Now, the question is that a geographic state or is that a conditional state? In other words, is it like hunger is a state? It's a state of being, right? So,
well, it is a state of being. My goodness. Each of those 13 colonies were states.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But what I'm saying is, but if a well-regulated militia is necessary to maintain a state of freedom, not a geographic state, but just in order to be free. In other words, you can't be a free person unless there's a well-regulated militia to defend you. It's a necessary condition. So take the word state and put in the word condition. So if it's a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free condition, or being necessary to the condition of freedom, that's what
and
I said.
And that freedom,
right?
And if that freedom, that status of freedom, is your responsibility, you can't depend on somebody else.
Right. But the thing is, but they say that the state national guard and the other stuff, they bring it to the state. In other words, that's a government state of freedom. It's not. It's an individual state of freedom because the Bill of Rights is about individuals. So I contend that when the Founding Fathers said, and I'm going to look up the original debate on the Second Amendment. I'd be curious to find out what it is there. But it seems to me that it says that when they talk about a free state, they're not just talking geographically. They're talking about your freedom. It is necessary to have well-armed citizen militias as a condition of your freedom. And I don't think that's ever been talked about. I don't think that's ever been argued. I've never heard it, except here. Interesting, huh? Hey, I'm going to bring it up with Maj Touré tomorrow. Maj is coming on Black Guns Matter. So Maj is going to be on for an hour. So I'm going to make a little note to myself, state. He'll find that really interesting versus condition of freedom. See, folks, this isn't a talk show. This is a workshop. This is all about ideas here. But Maj is going to be on. Hopefully he'll be on a bunch of times. I'm going to present him. I've already sent him and his staff some of our gun bills. So hopefully he's had a chance to look at some of those before he comes on. Particularly the sound, the suppressor one and the Second Amendment one, tax credits, tax deductions. Let's take a break here. We've got Johnson coming up a little bit. He's written an article for American Thinker on January 6th. I've got some stuff. Again, this bogus political suicide or political prisoner suicide of one of those folks. Johnson talks about the, in his article, talks about, you know, open defiance of people against Trump during the Trump administration. I got some stuff on inflation. We got Maj Trey tomorrow. I got some of the fake climate stuff. It's a busy day here. And then the third hour, I've got a guy, Christopher Key. Christopher Key got assaulted by a large black woman with a wooden rod outside an abortion clinic as she's in her purple scrubs. And then the police come by and say, well, there's nobody there by that description, and she's not an employee, even though she's dressed as an employee. We're going to talk about that, too. That's going to be – well, Jonathan's here now. He's here early. Let's get him on. Maybe I'll play my other thing a bit later. We'll see what we can do. Let's find out. Jonathan, did you want to get in early, or do you have to leave early?
No, I just wanted to see if you're talking about me behind my back before I got on.
Always.
I said I thought I'd find out what you're talking about before I, you know, a few minutes. What's that?
We always talk. In fact, I was just announcing your article. I was talking about this really horrible article you wrote for American Thinker, how you just don't know what you're talking about, and you have no analysis possibility.
Really?
Yeah. No, I'm lying.
We were okay. And we were talking in code, okay?
Go ahead, Pierre. Tell the truth.
We were talking in code, Jonathan.
Yep.
Well, I kind of enjoyed that one, and they kind of – let me try to turn off – oh, darn it. I guess I'll just have to mute it. I want to find – I hate it when I have so many windows open, and I always do because I can't turn off. That was something in Arizona.
Yeah, I have to – oh, he's
anyway,
in Arizona
so,
right now? Or is this the
no,
Friday?
No, I'm a couple days behind the times.
Hmm.
He was out there. He was out there in Arizona, I think, Friday.
Well,
so,
what I was talking about.
What did you?
Let me tell you. I just cut up with this hour. Yeah, what we spent a lot of this on is my idea, and it's not just my idea. It's a lot of people's idea that the transgender Democrat Party, formerly known as the Rhino Republican Party, is going to do nothing different after the election, even if they win, than they're doing now. That they could hold their own January 6th committee now. That they could be at the border now handing out cards saying, don't get too comfortable, Trump's coming back. That they could be having daily talking points. I think the fix is already in. I think that the fact that the Democrats aren't changing a single policy that we all hate, okay? Gas is down a little bit because demand is down so much. That's the only reason. It's not because of anything they've done. But they hate us. They hate America. They hate freedom. And the fact that they're supremely confident that not one single Democrat is saying, you know, we really need to change policies because they're not that effective. They're not working, and Americans, you know, don't like what's going on before the midterms. They're saying just the opposite. We need to do more of this. We don't care what the American people think. We don't care how high gas prices are. So to me, it means the fix is in.
There's so much there, of course. So did you actually see my American Thinker thing? Lessons
I've already
learned.
Read, but I want to go over it with you. Yeah. Because you got some interesting things.
Sure. Well, but part of it, I think, is the way it comes to me. It's like the Rhino Republican Party is all those things, and they're also stupid. I'm not the first person. You know, it's been a long-running analysis to say we have the evil party, which are the Democrats, and we have the stupid party. Which is, you know, which is the Republicans. And I, you know, they're very prominent Republicans who said that, not just me being, you know, a horrible person. It's been a long-running analysis of, you know, of the Republican Party. So I mean, they have like in my article, I try to explain how, you know, why the insiders hate Trump so much because, you know, I don't know if you actually mentioned it or not already, but the fact that they act like a boyfriend whose girlfriend dumped them for someone they think is less than them. So
yeah,
like
I actually had a little different example.
Dumped me.
It's funny you should say that because I came up with a different metaphor. It's like the guy that wants to, you know, jump the babe, the most popular babe in town, and promises her, you know, the trip to Paris, the nice wedding, the ring, you know, eternal faithfulness, and just wants to, you know, screw her over. And this is what the Republicans want to do to us. They'll promise us everything. But basically, they just want to, you know, take advantage of us for the night. In other words, election day. And after that, they'll dump us. They don't care. So that's absolutely true.
And that's been outrageously obvious. It's like every time, you know, like repealing Obamacare or anything else you want to talk about. I mean, Mitch McConnell, of course, is the worst. And this is the way they've done things, is they, explicitly, campaign on an issue saying that we have to win in November. And then, of course, they never do it. And then they try to reuse it for next time. So they're very explicit. I mean, it's incredibly obvious about it.
But I think you made this point, too, that Republican voters have to stop being, battered spouse syndrome, that Republican voters have to stop treating themselves, like, oh, he won't beat me again. yeah, he will. They're just setting themselves up for another assault, and nothing changes. And I think the election's already been thrown. I think the Democrats are confident they're going to win. I think the gelding Republicans are going to do nothing about it. I think that's part of the plan, that they're going to look like, even if they do win, they're still going to find a way to give power to the Democrats. I talked about the Senate. It's 50-50, and yet the Democrats run it. Well, why? Kamala Harris is not a member of Congress. There's no reason for them to assume that the Democrats have a majority, because she drops in for a tiebreaker. She's not a member. That means the committees could all be joint run instead of being Democrat run. This whole thing is a farce. They gave away the party. I got the Dick Morris article in the earlier hour of how the Democrats stole 7 Republican seats from California in 2018. So they stole the election in 2018. They stole the election in 2020. There's no reason to think they will do anything different in 2022 because there's no reason to think the Republicans will do anything different in 2022 because they didn't correct 2020. And that's when you came in.
Well, all true. And I think that it's more of a mixed bag this time. I think that there are Republicans who have genuinely learned a different way. There are voters who are not going to put up with it, and I think they realize it. And there are Kevin McCarthy's and Mitch McConnell who are, I was going to say that there are Republican rhinos who are just dumb.
Mm-hmm.
The worst of them are not dumb. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell knows he's scamming us. It's what they do. It's what they've done for decades. And part of the reason why they're scamming us, I know that they're scamming us, is like some of the things that he does. Like Mitch McConnell went and openly sent conservative candidates. People will say, well, Mitch McConnell, was Trump's ally. No, he wasn't. He's just a little bit more snaky than your average rhino. He looks like he's doing things. Really, he's doing them mostly for example, people say that Mitch McConnell supported Trump's judge appointments. And he did do a magnificent job on that. But he wasn't doing it for Trump. He was doing it for the donor class, the business interests who wanted those judges.
You see, that never came out at the time. It's quite fascinating, but you're absolutely right. And I didn't know that. And that was a great revelation that you were presenting. But, yeah, it makes sense.
Well, look at the overlap. Because if you want to know, like I said on here before, I don't think it's been said anywhere else, is that while Trump was president, Mitch McConnell never let the Senate go into recess because otherwise Trump would be able to make recess appointments.
Oh, that's interesting.
They'd make the extra special effort to have somebody come in like every 3 days and conduct no business, even over like the Christmas holiday, just to make sure that Trump could not make any recess appointments. Is that an
ally?
Did
he want to? Did Trump have recess appointments he wanted to make?
Yeah, I've
never heard a story on that.
People complain about, yes. When Trump, would talk about these things, he had a lot of terrible people, and he would say, he didn't know the right language to use. He didn't say it as clearly as others might, but he couldn't fire these traitors and bad people in Rhino, because he'd have no way of replacing them. He wouldn't be able to get a replacement through the Senate. Mm-hmm. And he had, and there were stories about how about all the appointments that were lined up waiting that the Senate wasn't acting on. And
oh, that's
so,
interesting.
And so if he didn't have what's the right word, like frenemy or something worse, if he didn't have, you know, a pretend friend in Mitch McConnell, he could have fired people and backfilled those positions.
What about the ones that aren't appointed? He could have fired all the lower people, made them acting whatever, you know, or, you know, and then replace all the lower folks.
But they weren't necessarily better. Like, for example, that's how Ken Cuccinelli, who I went to law school with, who, you know, mm-hmm. in Virginia, got to be a fairly high position in the Department of Homeland Security. But the problem with that is that you have to be able to, I mean, most of the people in the lower positions mm-hmm. are lifelong Democrats who have burrowed their way into the.
We had an article on that. The people that go into government service are the ones that like to control other people. Tian, you remember that article? I forgot exactly when it was last week, but there's an article talking about how the government people are leftist because they want to control everything, but they don't want to build. They don't want to create. They don't want to put in the effort to, you know, raise the capital, make a business, and make something work. They're much happier controlling other people, and the best place to do that is government. For those that can't build, can't do, you know, when Obama said, "You didn't make that business, we did." BS. You know, but those are the kind of people that go into government. So it makes sense that most of the government people would be Democrats, because most Democrats
want
to control
everybody
other people.
Else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, where are we going with this? So the point is that your question was, are we mm-hmm. going to get a Republican takeover, as we have again and again and again, where the Republicans are no better than the, you know, than the Democrats? And, you know, anybody who thinks or talks or something like that says, well, don't bother voting. No, you know, that's ridiculous. You could say, well, you know, the Democratic Party is driving us off a cliff at 200 miles an hour, and the Republicans are driving us off a cliff at 50 miles an hour. You know, it's still better to have a Republicans controlling Congress. But it's also
not if Paul Ryan's
we
speaker.
Also have to hold these.
not if Kevin McCarthy's what? Speaker. Not if Paul Ryan's speaker, because he stopped the Republicans. The first 2 years of Trump, 16 to 18, 2016, 2018, Paul Ryan made sure that nothing good happened. He was the deep state man. He was the block. You know, Kevin McCarthy, who's way too smooth. I mean, he looks great on camera. He's got that sincere look on his face, those big blue eyes. Oh, trust me. Oh, please. I'm with you. I'm one of you. It's a bunch of BS. He's a scam artist.
Yeah, they aren't.
He's the ultimate con man, but he's good at it. That's what makes him so dangerous.
Right, but there's no reason to say, you know, I'm going to stay home and just let the Democrats be in charge of Congress. There's no universe in which it's better to have the Democrats controlling Congress.
No, but we did talk about the idea that everybody has to vote. And I'm like, no. And Bianca and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, that it's not the vote. It's not everybody voting that makes a better election. It's everybody who's informed who votes that makes a better election.
Right.
I don't want everybody voting. I don't. I would discourage people. If you don't know the issues, for God's sake, stay home. Do the rest of us a favor. Have the responsibility to not vote if you don't know the issues. It's actually better for the country if uninformed voters or uninformed people stay home. Now, I still want the Republicans to win, as bad as they are, because I want to make them better. But quite frankly, with citizen legislation, I don't give a damn who's in power. I really don't.
All right, but if they have, if people are making the talk thing, saying that the Republicans who win might not be that great, you mm-hmm. know, nobody should take that to mean, you know, give up, mm-hmm. because I mean, you know, it's
no,
you know, it's,
yeah, but, you know.
I mean, because we're still way better off having bad Republicans. I mean, there are downsides and upsides, because the downside of having bad Republicans is that the voters get confused and think, well, that's what Republicans stand for. And like, no, that's what bad Republicans stand for. You know, we're, you know, so yes, there is, it is imperfect to have the, you have Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell and all the other traitors in there, but it's the, it, there is no universe in which that should make anybody think that they shouldn't vote for the Republicans.
Yeah, but I still want to get away from a party-driven political system and move to an issues-driven system. So in other words, the whole point of our citizen legislation is that it doesn't matter who's in office. You know, vaccine product liability is good, you know, for the American people so that we can have some way to fight back, and good for lawyers. I'm already sort of in touch with the national trial lawyers. I'm going to give them a call after the show today, but I want to get them on our side and see if they'd be interested in helping sponsor our vaccine product liability bill. For one thing, it would make for a hell of a lot of trials and billions of dollars in settlements, but that's not the big thing. The big thing is it would create an entire system of freedom, and it would punish these people, you know, in big pharma for pushing these mandates. I guarantee those vaccines will be off the shelf in seconds. If product liability passes, those things will be gone. You know, and it doesn't matter who's in power. I don't care if the Democrats or Republicans are in power. It doesn't matter. What matters is what's best for our freedom, what's best for our country. And so if we move away from I think we spend too much time talking about the personalities, who's the best Republican, who's the best Democrat. It doesn't matter. What really matters is how do we get the most freedom for the most people as quickly as possible. And the best way to do that are the two bills we have, vaccine product liability and changing big tech censorship to make their liability immunity conditional on them not touching anything that goes on in social media or with search engines. Very simple, very straightforward, but that would change everything.
Well, for the next 2 years, you know, even if we had a whole Congress of Jim Jordans, Biden is not going to sign any legislation that we want signed. So, you know, I do believe that, you know, if there is widespread consensus about something, then it will pass regardless of party. You know, if the voters are really serious and they really vote on it, and
See, that's the great unknown, though. The great unknown is what if a vaccine product liability bill, let's say we get some national reports on it. Let's say people in the news start talking about it. Let's everybody from Sebastian Gorka to Newsmax to One American News to Tucker Carlson all of a sudden says there's a citizen written vaccine product liability bill out there that does exactly what everybody wants to do, you know, and yet Congress hates it. And Big Pharma is, you know, spending billions of dollars to defeat it. Okay. That's news. It doesn't matter what the party is. Because neither party is going to want it because they both take money from Big Pharma, right? But wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, that day is coming. I absolutely believe that day is coming when the issues
become more important than personalities. That would pass. Because, again, these people, I mean, the thing is that these people are phonies and they are self-centered, you know, but they look out and they look out only for themselves. Mm-hmm. So if the American people want something, they're going to do it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm counting.
Unless
those are the people that voted for Trump.
Right.
Those are the people that are going to scream and yell at their member of Congress and say, look, if you don't vote for vaccine product liability, I'm not returning you to office. But see, they've never had the bill to do that. People think that the bills have to come from Congress. They have to be written by lawyers. They have to be complicated. They're like some royal, you know, permission from on high, the bill writers. It's a bunch of nonsense. I write it myself. It's not that tough. You've written one. Pianki's written, I think, two
right.
now.
And when
two
they,
or three. You know,
and
it's,
of course,
it's,
people.
Go ahead.
Right, and of course, people should recognize that when Congress writes a bill, first of all, the contents inside have nothing to do with the title. You can't judge a bill by the cover.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, but theirs are dishonest scams.
Yeah.
So when you vote for the, you know, for the warm fuzzy puppies bill, you're actually voting to, you know, send everybody to the gulag and
the yes
the Constitution.
Anti-lynching bill. Yeah, like the anti-lynching bill.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
John Lewis Well, John Lewis' anti-lynching bill didn't have a damn thing to do about lynching.
What was it, money? What was in there?
I did not know that. But that's,
I didn't know that either.
The thing is, it's funny because if somebody comes to your door and wants to sell you a vacuum cleaner,
right.
People will be really suspicious. But if a politician comes to your door and wants to get, and wants to promise them all these things, we say, we just swallow it, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, it's
pretty
funny.
People have to be as suspicious of Congress as they are of some guy calling them on the phone and saying they just, their long lost nephew is a Nigerian prince or something.
but that's conditioning.
Why do we believe?
Yeah, it's conditioning.
What?
It's conditioning. Why do people believe that the Supreme Court can, say that gay marriage is a right? They can't say that. Why do people believe that the president can just issue executive orders not based on statute and declare emergencies? That's not there either. Why does this government believe that that we can go to war without a declaration of war? People believe all kinds of things, and because those beliefs actually manifest themselves. I got a question for you, though, and something Bianchi brought up earlier. One of my bills is a constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. That's going to be huge. Now, Congress will never pass it. They'll never start that process. Can the states, without a convention of states, initiate a constitutional amendment?
No.
Is there a process for that?
That's the controversy about the Convention of States.
Okay.
Is that the Convention of States is believed by many people to be exactly that. So you say without a Convention of States, a lot of people will insist that that's exactly what a Convention of States does. And it's very controversial in a lot of different ways. And again, if there's a moment, the Republicans took over a lot of state legislators, and if there's a really red wave, we might take over more.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Republicans who control the legislatures aren't all Kevin McCarthy's and Mitch McConnell's, and Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney, then there may be a moment where that's the best we can do is we should grab the power in all those state legislatures and ram through some amendments. The concern is go ahead,
Jonathan. That's where it should start. I mean, why is it that we're afraid to put A before X, Y, and Z? It starts with the people.
Just because. It's just basically because we don't trust these guys, trust these people. If we had state legislatures, even Virginia, my God, since I've been involved in the 80s, the Republicans in the state legislature are worse than the Democrats. But if we can do, if we could do that, that might be all that's left. It's just a question of, can you trust these career politicians who would be voting on these things?
And who has the ultimate responsibility of whether or not that can be trusted? It still goes back to the people themselves.
True.
Yeah. Here's the problem. I was just reading the Constitution here, Article 5, which says the Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution. Now, the last big one, I think, was the Equal Rights Amendment. Congress proposed that. 2/3 passed in both houses and went around to the states. Now, it didn't get enough states, which is too bad, actually, to ratify it. But that's the usual process. Then it says, or on application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments. See, I think that's wrong. I'd much rather have said, I might even propose an amendment to this. It should have said that, why can't the states have the same rights that the Congress has? That says if the Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution, why shouldn't it say that on the applications of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states shall propose amendments to the Constitution? What, just take that word convention out and everything changes. So I'm saying is, why can't the states do that?
Yeah, it's the convention part that worries a lot of people.
Yeah, because they'll screw around with the Constitution.
State legislature.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the state legislatures, and of course, like I say, that it's very brief, but the state legislatures, if they could directly, like you said, if they directly voted on an amendment,
mm-hmm.
That would be more clear. What people worry about, including the old Phyllis Schlafly, is that the only thing the states can do is call the convention, and then the convention has no restraints on it. Now,
that's
an
problem.
Interpretation. Who knows? You know.
Yeah.
But that's the worry is that the states, you know, if the states could vote directly
mm-hmm.
on an amendment, and then if two thirds mm-hmm. of them voted on the same amendment, then it would go, you know, from there.
So
that would be better.
Yeah. Well, there's a way to do that. Actually, it's kind of a backhanded way. They could do it by resolution and say, we, the state of Florida, you know, are both our legislatures concurring that more than two-thirds pass an amendment that Congress shall not have the power to borrow money. And we send it to Congress and say, you need to do this, or we're not going to give you revenue. We're not going to give you whatever we owe you. We're not going to give it to you. We're going to withhold all our tax revenue that we'd normally send to you unless you pass unless you put this through the congressional process and then send it back to the states. That's the only way I can see them doing it without a convention. And they could do that way.
Well, that's part of the discussion is that people say that mm-hmm. it's never happened in our history. But what happens is that when a convention of the states gets close, when the states mm-hmm. get close to using it, Congress just goes ahead and does it. Because they see a lot, the Congress tends to say, this is the way it's going, this is what the people want, and if we let it go to a convention, then it's, you know, everyone will see that we lack exclusive authority, and they don't want that. So Congress, you know, when there's danger that the states will actually propose an amendment, Congress mm-hmm. just, you know, goes ahead with and does it themselves.
Well, let's see if that'll work.
Congress gets this authority from the states. I don't understand this. Do people not understand that? You mean to tell me when Congress sees that the states are getting ready to move in a direction, all of a sudden they say, well, we better do it? No. You get your power from the states, the people.
If that don't
become commonplace, common knowledge, common understanding, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
I'm going to propose this.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, yeah, but it's like we started out the conversation. We say that, you know, saying that they're these rhinos are like, you know, bitter former boyfriends, and they're also stupid. I mean, they're dangerous in the sense that they're bitter and they can't stand, you know, that we rejected them in 2016. But they also don't know anything about anything. They, you know, like they don't know any of the stuff about the Constitution. All they know is what – I forget what you started out with, but they've never studied anything. Mm-hmm. They just know it's always been done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually
but they don't, you know –
We have a Constitution reporter now. I don't know if you haven't talked to Amber yet, but do you ever get a chance? Join us on a Friday. Now, she's off for the next, I think, one or two Fridays. 17-year-old kid has wrote a bill that all members of Congress have to take the immigrant citizenship test to qualify for office, including incumbents.
Isn't that great?
Oh, it's a great bill. It's on writeyourlaws.com. Anyway, so I liked it so much, and I talked to Bianchi, and Josie was online too. I said, we should have her as a regular reporter. It's like, yeah. So I emailed her back. I said, we want you mm-hmm. as our Constitution reporter. So now she's on Fridays at 8 o'clock. In fact, she's written another bill, which I have to go check out. Apparently it's on Write Your Laws right now. And she's taking this somewhere. I'll get the details from her and find out. 17-year-old kid. She's one of our best constitutional advocates.
Oh, wow.
And she's doing Constitution reporter. Oh, yeah, it's fabulous. Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, so I'm really happy to have younger folks involved with the show. But that's the future. That's the good future. You know, but let me change the subject a little bit here. I've got something that I've been meaning to talk about for weeks. It's just been sitting on the bottom of my computer since June. Did you ever hear about Schedule F? And this is from the Brownstone Institute. This is Jeffrey Tucker. It's a new way of hiring.
I've seen this as a proposal. I don't understand. I mean, there's all that. I've seen lots of stuff about how exciting it is, and I haven't seen it defined.
I'll give you a little bit of a background. Okay, go ahead.
Because, you know, I was a federal employee and there are people who, you know, are in the competitive service, which means you're hired normally you go through a competitive hiring process, and then mm-hmm. one has rights and can't be fired and stuff like that. There are special schedules, like Schedule A. I think they hire attorneys and other professionals. There's Schedule C, where certain positions are authorized, but there's a total quantity limit to be politically appointed. And that means they don't have, like they do not stay in power after the president retains. They're not full employees. And there's various schedules like that for specialty situations. So they've come up with this idea of a Schedule F, and I don't understand what it's supposed to do. They would have to get it, I believe, through Congress. Which means
I've got an article here from Brownstone, the guy that I think worked on it. So
all right.
I'm trying to find the most salient parts of it. So it says, well, let me start this here and see if it makes sense. So Jeffrey Tucker, who I've got to talk to Brownstone again, see what I can do with this, wrote this June 27th this year. He says, 2 weeks before the 2020 general election, on October 21st, 2020, Donald Trump issued an executive order, and that's EO13957, for those that want to look it up, on creating Schedule F in the accepted service. It sounds boring. Actually, it would have fundamentally changed in the best possible way the entire functioning of the administrative bureaucracy that rules this country in a way that bypasses both the legislative and judicial process and has ruined the checks and balances inherent in the U.S. Constitution. This is what I call the bureaucratic state. This is all the bureaucracies that need to be shipped off to Alaska to go serve up there in Guam and places like that. But anyway, the bureaucracy never changes. They keep doing what they do. Anyway, so the article says the administrative state for the better part of a century, and really dating back to the Pendleton Act of 1883, has designed policy, made policy, structured policy, implemented policy, and interpreted policy while operating outside the control of Congress, the president, and the judiciary. It's like an independent government. It is a deep state, really. It says the gradual rise of the fourth branch of government, which is very much the most powerful branch, has reduced the American political process to mere theater as compared with the real activity of government, which rests with the permanent bureaucracy. Here we go. It says any new president, and then we'll get to nuts and bolts here, numbers. Any new president can hire the heads of agencies, and they can hire staff, which are known as political appointees. These 4,000 political appointees ostensibly rule 432 agencies, as listed by the Federal Register, as well as some 2.9 million employees, and that's aside from military and post office, that effectively inhabit permanent jobs. This permanent state, and this is the problem, right? Sometimes called the deep state, knows the ropes and the processes of government far better than any temporary political appointee, thus reducing the appointed jobs to cosmetic positions for the press to hound while the real actions of government take place behind the scenes. Now, you started to talk about that in your article for American Thinker, talking about how all the ways that Trump was defied was absolutely just nobody cared. You know, everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you didn't mention this in the article, but Mark Milley calling his counterpart in China, which he had more in common with. The State Department, remember the one of the impeachments, Vindman and that redhead from the State Department. They said, well, we have our counterparts in Ukraine. We have our counterparts here and there. And those are the people that we talk to. In other words, they don't care. They've got their own separate government talking to other government bureaucrats like themselves. Dr. Fascist has Dr. Fascist in other countries. There's an Australian Dr. Fascist. There's a Canadian, English Dr. Fascist. There's probably all kinds of other countries that have their Dr. Fascists. They all talk to each other. And then there's the WHO Dr. Fascists. They all talk to each other from the World Health Organization. They don't care about government. But I want to get to your article, and then I'll get back to this one. But this Schedule F is fascinating. Right. Go ahead.
What
is the president executive of? What is the president executive of then? If you got this deep state that exists independent.
That's a great question.
That's a damn good question.
I don't know.
That's a damn good question. Because Congress has passed, and really with FDR, the administrative state, the idea that, that we're going to have these scientific, non-political
technocracy
and all this nonsense from the 30s. And so the Congress has passed all these laws for example, when Trump wanted to speak to the DOJ, everyone shrieked, like, oh, you can't do that. You know, well, hell yeah, you can.
You can fire every one of them.
It's, you know, there's all this stuff like that. So, so the thing is that Congress has occupied this field, and it should never have been allowed. You see, they should, you know, it they've stripped the executive branch of all this this power, and it's just unacceptable. So it does leave the question very succinctly put, like, well, what is the executive of then? So that's the problem. Supposedly. Oh, I forget what I was going to say, but supposedly, you know, that's one of the things that Kavanaugh was supposed to be against, is the administrative state that exists apart from the president. The president has no.
Let's talk about Kavanaugh, Barrett, and Gorsuch. Didn't they all come from the Federalist Society? Isn't that in itself like a private bureaucracy? I mean, weren't they handpicked? Excuse me. To be like the business people that Mitch McConnell would approve for his donor class?
Well, except that they're not a bureaucracy. They're just a like a club. You know, they're just political people who associate with each other.
Yeah, but they all believe the same nonsense.
So,
they believe that Marbury versus Madison is settled law. They believe that Roe v. Wade creates an abortion right. They believe all this crap that is absolute nonsense. We all know it's nonsense. In fact, they know it's nonsense, and yet they'll spout it. You know, they'll spout the party line because they don't want to give up their power as judiciary, even though they don't have judicial review. They know they don't have judicial review, and yet they say they do.
Well, yeah, within the conservative movement, the Federalist Society is more on the business interest side of things. That's true.
Yeah. So what you really need,
I mean,
they are more independent.
They're not, say, for example, the social conservative side of things. They're not, they're not so much the low taxes side of things. They're the conservatism exclusively means whatever's good for big corporations side of the conservative movement.
Yeah. It'd be nice if like Ron Paul were nominated for the Supreme Court. And I think we need to get away from judges. I think judges are probably the worst people to serve on the Supreme Court, considering the isolated, insulated world that they live in. But that, you want to talk about a permanent state? That's one. And well, let me get back to this this thing here, but that's a huge problem right there. But this permanent state that the bureaucrats do what they want, they don't care who the president is. And I remember talking to a school administrator back in college, University of Massachusetts, and we're trying to make change. And he says, you can try and make all the change you want. He says, but you're gone in 4 years, and I'll be here for 20. So I don't care about you.
Right.
And he was absolutely
exactly.
right.
And that's why the political appointees don't, nobody – see, I got hired. I applied to be a political appointee, and at the same time, I applied. Somebody sent me, and I will remain, coy about it. He sent me information on how to get hired in the bureaucracy, and so I happened to get a Schedule C bureaucratic, civil servant position in the U.S. Department of Education, and. So they didn't know, not everybody knew who I was. So I heard them like talking about the political appointees, and that's exactly their attitude is they don't care what the political appointees who supposedly run things say, because they're going to be gone in probably, an average of, 2.5 years, at most 4. So, they just openly, well, they don't openly, because they're smarter than that. But they will just like completely ignore what's in charge. They just ignore it. I had a job where we went around and tried to implement Reagan's executive order on productivity improvement. And we go in there and the people are like, what? So the president ordered it. Who cares? They couldn't give a hoot what President Reagan or, and it wasn't just because they, it was Reagan. It's like, I work here. He doesn't, imagine, And if you watched the January 6th hearings last Thursday, there was this, and it's in my article, we can go to, but there's this point, many people may have missed it, where he goes through everything that's going on, and they're just basically refusing to do what he said. And he turned to the other people visiting and said, see what I have to go through.
Yeah.
You know, imagine you issue orders and nobody does them. That's what we had
question.
For decades,
yep.
But that's what Reagan, and Reagan too, but Trump, like he said, here's what you're going to do. And they go, no, we're not going to do that. Or
and
they just don't
them.
Do it.
Yeah. But now tell me about the schedules. If schedule C, is that like civil service? Do you know, of the schedules, how many are there? A, B, C, D, I guess up through E.
About up to F, I think. B is like some exception. A is attorneys and things like that. Special.
Also, it's by job category then. Okay. All right.
No, they're exceptions.
Huh.
Their
What's
job
the regular
category,
schedule?
You know, the other schedule. The regular thing is competitive service. You have to. I mean, they used to even have an exam. They now just have a fiction that you have an exam, and you have to advertise the position. You have to interview everybody who applies, who remotely qualifies. They use your resume to give you points, and they pretend that's an exam, and and
nobody lies
that,
on
that
the resume, right?
So yeah, so the thing is, the schedules are exceptions to normal bureaucrats, and there's some for, you know, that were Schedule B, where it would be impractical to hire, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I don't know if they need some expert for some reason on an emergency basis or something like that, you know, but the problem is that nobody pays any attention to the political appointees or the president. Like, nobody cares what the president has to say.
Let me get back to the article.
And I'm, you know, not just Trump. Like, this is my office, you know, who are you?
Well, this gets right back to the article, which talks about the lockdowns, the masks, and all the things done by bureaucrats. And it says, following the lockdowns of mid-March 2020, Trump became increasingly frustrated with the CDC and Anthony Fauci, who we call Dr. Fascist around here. His Trump was profoundly aware that he had no power to fire the man, despite his epically terrible role in prolonging COVID lockdowns long after Trump wanted to open up to save the American economy and society. See, some governors did. DeSantis closed initially, but opened up very quickly. Kristi Noem, South Dakota, never closed. Gretchen Whitmer never opened. You know, Gavin Newsom still has things, I think, closed. You know, so it's very interesting how they do it. But the thing was, the governors had a choice. The people didn't, but the governors did, as they abused different power. Anyway, but, you know, the idea that Trump couldn't fire Dr. Fascist is insane. He should have fired him immediately or defunded him or done something. Anyway, he says Trump's next step was radical and brilliant, the creation of a new category of federal employment. It was called Schedule F. This is a good time to talk about it. Employees of the federal government classified as Schedule F would have been subject to control by the elected president and other representatives. Who are they? They are those who met the following criteria: positions of a confidential, policy-determining, policy-making, or policy-advocating character, not normally subject to change as a result of the presidential transition, shall be listed in Schedule F. In appointing an individual to position in Schedule F, each agency shall follow the principle of veteran preference as far as administratively feasible. Okay, so this would be, so it says positions of a confidential, policy-determining, policy-making, or policy-advocating character, not normally subject to change as a result of presidential transition. Yes, it's all the permanent bureaucrats that have an effect on policy. So we're not talking about the managers, the supervisors, the HR people. We're not talking about the regular civil service. We're talking about people somewhere between the regular employees doing the administrative stuff and the cabinet positions, the appointed positions. This sounds like Schedule F, the people who would make policy but defy the president. They'd come under a whole new schedule. So do you know what they're under now?
Well, Trump couldn't fire policy. He could probably set his salary at $15 an hour.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's got control of the budgets of the agencies, I would think. I mean, you can just defund that whole department.
Yeah, make it quick.
Yeah,
you won't work for $15 an hour. Go ahead.
Yeah. But Jonathan, am I on the right track here that between the appointed cabinet heads and the basic, like, you know, regular management staff,
well,
are these policy
makers? The appointed cabinet heads are Schedule C. They're okay. Political appointees. And they're subject to you know, advice and consent by the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it difficult. But see, all of this we're talking about, it relates to what I was saying, mm-hmm. is that if you can't, you know, if Trump can't fire bad people, if he can't backfill the positions, and that's where Mitch McConnell, you know, faked it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but really stabbed him in the back. I mean, because not only is Mitch McConnell an enemy of the people of the United States of America, but he is a crafty about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's been around long enough to know the game.
Yeah, he's I call him the Swamp King.
Hmm.
He's the king of the swamp.
Hmm.
You know, but the other thing is that. So he, what, you know, the other, but the other thing is, like I say, imagine you're running an aircraft carrier, and when you turn the controls, nothing happens. You push on. That's what happened. I mean, you know, again, I've been studying these things since 1984, or 1987, I guess, when I was in the. So the thing is like, just but imagine you're the captain of the ship, and when you issue orders or push buttons, nothing happens. You know, it's just heading for the rocks and nothing, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay, yeah.
So you want to go back to like what little time we have left to go over my, in fact, at by 10, I might start getting a call from Stuart Rose from jail. We've been out of contact for like 10 days.
Well, I'm going to take a break at some point, so we can do that. We need like about 6 or 7 minutes to play one of our Santa Rosa
volunteer
pieces.
We need to do
pieces.
Some business.
Yeah. Do you want to take a break right now?
We want to talk about my article, finally. We've wandered all over the place.
we have wandered. All right. So we've got that. I've got a guest at the top of the hour. And, but you might have Stuart Rose join us at some point. I mean, I'll break.
No,
I'll
no, I have to do Stuart business Rose. With him. I may have to get off at 10.
Okay. So let's finish your article. I can always hold my guest up a few minutes. He's a new caller to the show.
Okay.
And,
so the thing
we'll
is
on
like,
the chat. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the relevant things there that we learned about January 6th. This is the crazy stuff that I hope the American people see through. So they're saying that, well, Trump wanted the Secret Service to drive him to the Capitol, and this is supposed to be bad. And they said no. So hold on a second. The President of the United States issues an order to the Secret Service
mm-hmm.
to take him somewhere. I don't care where it is. I don't care when it is. Mm-hmm. I don't care what president it is. And the Secret Service says, no, we're not going to do that. Now, they may say, you know, we're going to advise you that that's dangerous. Yeah, I can understand that. But
mm-hmm.
ultimately, I understand, but I'm going to do it. I'm the president. You're not.
Right.
And they don't do it?
Yeah,
I mean,
just
holy
fire
cow.
The spot. Yeah, that's dangerous.
And what kind of press? And they're talking about, like, oh, what kind of precedent does this set? Yeah, what kind of precedent does this set? And then we heard in the last thing in the January 6th hearing is that Trump was meeting with Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, the consultant from Overstock.com or whatever, and a couple other people in the evening. And this junior assistant, I don't know if it was Cassidy Hutchinson, I think it got confusing at that point, but we'll just say, Some junior staffer in the West Wing texts White House counsel. Clearly, you know, he should have been fired the day he stepped in. That this meeting is going on. Now, first of all, this indicates that this junior staffer finds absolutely nothing wrong about telling the texting at night the mm-hmm. White House counsel that there's a meeting going on he might not approve of. What kind of attitude does that tell you about how they treat the president of the United States?
Yeah, well, it's how they treat Donald Trump.
The staff.
Because, you know, depending on the president, they wouldn't do that. But, yeah, it's just absolute contempt. You know, it's the same contempt that,
and he,
you know, yeah.
And then they said that Cipollone, you know, broke the land speed record, driving back to the Capitol to break it up. Now, an attorney does not run your life. You know, your attorney is not your, you know, your guardian. They, you know, he should sit in his office, shut up, and wait for somebody to ask. You know, but the idea that Cipollone is driving back to the White House at night to bust up a meeting, and this is not my interpretation. This is all out there in the text messages. And say you can't, you know, the president can't have this meeting. You can't meet with these people. And that's where Trump turned to the people and said, "See what I have to deal with?" Meaning this is what's going on all the time. He was issuing orders, and they were not being followed. And they think they run. And if you listen to the first impeachment trial, again, this is what bugged the heck out of me, is you have all the Ukrainian mafia. And yes, Russia is, you know, is no angel in any of this. But you know, for years, you know, the Ukrainian mafia in the foreign service and the foreign policy capitals were like throwing rocks at the bear and saying, you know, oh, the bear will never eat me. Like, okay, eventually the bear eats you. It's not, you know, bad for the bear, but bad for you too.
Yeah.
And so they're outraged, saying like, you know, Trump wasn't following the foreign policy of the United States. It's like, no, Trump is the foreign policy.
He is
of the
foreign
States.
Policy. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I think I screamed that at my TV,
you know,
too. Yeah.
When Trump says, "Here's what we're going to do," that's the last word. And you know, but they were so outraged that Trump wasn't listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't elected civil servant. Yeah,
servant.
We're the unelected.
They forgot
civil
the servant,
servant
part.
And how dare Trump not follow our advice? But the thing is, these people are so drenched in this swamp that they when they say these things, they're completely unaware of what they're saying. You know, they say these things as if everybody would agree with them. The president doesn't decide anything. He's just supposed to sit there and do what we tell him to do. Like, you know, like Slow Joe.
Well, now that's interesting. You should say that.
I'm not making it up. If you listen to the,
that's why Joe was picked.
You have to listen carefully at how they.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway, the other things that we learned were that they wouldn't let him go to the Capitol, but then they're blaming him for not taking charge of what happened to the Capitol. You know, they're saying, you know, we won't allow you to go to the Capitol, but how dare you not intervene at the Capitol? And then they're saying, like, remember during the 2020 riots, mm-hmm. he wanted to use the Insurrection Act to put down all these riots and things. I said, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And then in the January 6th committee, they're blaming him because he didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying it was a dereliction of duty because he didn't do what they told him he must never do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he doesn't know what he can and can't do. That's the problem, you know. And I was just looking at the Constitution article, too, very clearly says the executive power. It doesn't say the partial executive power. It says the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. So the executive power is to make all the decisions for the executive branch. I mean, that's what executive power is. So he's the CEO. He's used to being a CEO. But he wasn't able to be. This must have been incredibly frustrating because when he from Trump Tower said, you know, issued a directive to his managers, they would do it or they would be fired, and they knew it. You know, I mean, Trump was a great boss, but you know, he was used to dealing, and he should have been able to deal with the executive branch of a corporation are very similar. They have a hierarchy, they have a chain of command, they have they have bureaucrats who report to higher bureaucrats who report to cabinet secretaries who report to the president. It's very much like a corporation. And so for the president, you know, that's the whole power is right there in the Constitution. And for the minions to say, you can't, I'm not going to do what you say. You have to do what we say. You know, that's insubordination. That should be grounds for immediate firing.
He couldn't fire him. And if he did fire him, how would he ever replace him? Because the Senate wouldn't go along with it, with McConnell.
Then the positions are not filled. You know, you got to start going to war here, you know, and it's, that's what you have to do.
He should have done it. I mean, Ronald Reagan made the same mistake in some respects, is that he didn't realize how bad things really were.
Yeah.
He thought, you know, I could go on and on. I'll explain that some other time. We don't have time. But the other thing is they were trying to say that Trump was derelict of duties. His duty was to see that the laws be faithfully executed. But the thing is, he's saying, well, you can't meddle in the Congress, but you should have. And, for example, I finally pulled up two U.S. – I didn't put it in the article that I looked up. Two U.S. Code 1961 says that the U.S. Capitol Police is in charge of the U.S. Capitol buildings and grounds with some relationship to the District of Columbia Metropolitan Police Department. The president, the Congress has put itself in charge of security at the Capitol. So if they're going to, so they can't, so, I mean, you could question whether or not they can do that, but they did. So if they're going to say that the president didn't step in and take control of things at the Capitol, Congress put itself in charge of that process. It's not the president's job. Now, theoretically, constitutionally, yes, it is. But in terms of the laws that they passed, they've taken that away from the president.
And, yeah, I mean, the president would not have ordered the doors open. I can't see Trump would have ordered the doors be left open and the police say, come on in. You know, I can't imagine that would have happened.
Right.
This is how we know this is an insurrection.
And there's
by the deep state.
And they're still trying to
– yeah.
Uh-huh, sure. And they're still trying to say that that he – you know, because Liz Cheney will get up there and lie and say, he didn't order the military, you know, to step – on that day. No, 4 days earlier. You know, it's like Liz Cheney is saying that Trump did nothing on that day to send in the military, the National Guard. Well, it's because he already had done it 4 days before.
Exactly.
And the evidence, you know, slowly things are coming out, you know, proving in writing that that's true. So the committee is just lying about that too, is that he did, you know, he did order it, just not on that day because he was early.
Hmm.
And but the thing is, you know, again, it's funny how I hope people listen carefully that everything that they're blaming him he didn't do, they previously shrieked that, oh, he can't do that. He should never do that. And so it's just I just hope that people, you know, it's like there's a famous, I don't remember the name, but there was a politician in the Deep South like 100, 150 years ago.
Dewey Long.
Would go around accused. Maybe, I don't know, but he would accuse his opponent of being a thespian. My opponent admits to being a thespian, which means he's an actor.
Exactly.
You know,
he was
participating. And then people go, oh, just because of the way he would say it. And they didn't know what it meant. So I hope that all the committee and Trump's enemies are doing is that they're accusing him of being a thespian. By just in a horrified, my opponent eats ice cream. And, you know,
he's upsetting the primal forces is what he's doing.
Know.
Yeah. Did you ever see that speech by
the one judge?
I guess we're all talking. Okay,
it's like
on.
The one judge that used the term niggerly. Oh, my goodness.
Niggerly.
Did you hear that? Niggerly just means.
No,
busy.
No, what? Tell us.
Yeah, it was a judge.
No,
he used that term, the word niggerly. And, of course, you know where everybody went. But define, it just means stingy.
Yeah, person of low character and cheap. Yeah, that's what it means. Oh, yeah, but you can't say it. Bianchi can say it. That's funny. Josie's on the line, too. I just wanted to do one quick story before I get to Josie. If you ever see the movie Network with Ned Beatty playing.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one where Peter Finch says, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. That's a great scene. But another really great scene is when Ned Beatty says, you know, explains the way the world works. It's not Republicans, it's not Democrats, it's, you know, it's shekels, drachmas, kroner, you know, it's euro, I guess before euros and things like that. He says, Howard Beale, you have messed with the primal forces and you shall atone. In other words, that's what they were saying to Trump. We're the bureaucrats, we're in charge. You've messed with the primal forces. We run things. You're just there to sit there and shut up for 4 years and look presidential, and we will keep things going the way we want to keep things going. Those are the primal forces, and that's why they hated Trump. He messed with the what they consider the natural order. That's his major crime. Josie, we've got a few minutes left before we get to our guest.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Last night I was watching the X-22 report, and he was telling us, Dave, and also
what's that?
What's the X-22 report? It's a program that we watch, conservatives, and also Truth and RTV, which he's our friend, Bernie. from Las Vegas, and they're talking about Milley, the criminal in charge in the military. It seems like they're investigating, and it looks like he was behind the whole thing on the January the 6th. So they're
to
investigating it.
To keep the military out?
That he was
out?
In charge with the police, and our military are not supposed to be involved with the police at all. So a lot of stuff is going to be coming
out.
Wait
a minute. This is interesting. This makes a lot of sense. What did he do specifically? What are they saying he did?
Well, organized January 6th together with the police and the mayor in the city.
To bring in Antifa, to get Trump supporters in the Capitol? What exactly?
To bring Nazis from the Ukraine. They're going to release evidence that Nazis from the Ukraine, they're in the mask, and a lot of those people, Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and Nancy Pelosi, it's the one given control of the Milley to do it. And a lot of stuff is going to be released, and they're showing evidence already.
Wait a minute. So you're saying Milley's part of the coup? That he brought in like the Ray Epps and the other people. He coordinated the FBI and he made sure the Trump supporters were above so they could do the coup underneath.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I just don't get that really clear. Yeah.
Yes.
It makes
it's
sense.
Coming.
Let's put it to the panel. Does it make sense that Milley, hold on, Josie. Does it make sense that Milley, who hated Trump, which we know, who reported to his Chinese counterpart, completely defied Trump, would he have a part in the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in? Jonathan, what do you think?
It's entirely possible, but
okay.
We don't have direct. I don't know if direct evidence, but yes, it makes sense.
I mean, that's why the military wasn't there.
Well,
would he have controlled the National Guard there, or is that somebody else?
In some sense. And the thing is that when you look at the videos compiled, not created, but compiled by Revolver.News, so don't dismiss them.
Mm-hmm.
There are videos
like
from all over showing what happened with Ray Epps and how it went in there. You say that is not the FBI. That is toppling governments techniques. The FBI doesn't do that kind of thing. The military, the CIA, somebody else does that sort of thing, what we see in those videos.
But
Jonathan, you have to remember too that I think Donald Trump have people because Donald Trump in the intelligence military has 3 or 4 laptops from Nancy Pelosi in their possession. A lot of the stuff is going to be released in time. They have it all well organized, the whole thing.
You keep saying that theory. I still don't buy it.
Well,
it's
coming.
Too late.
It's coming.
Well,
Mike Pence will be arrested. Mike Pence is going to be arrested. He's no good. Mike Pence is no good at all.
Well, I know he's no good. What's he going to be arrested for?
For treason, traitor to this country, what he did on January the 6th. But he was set up to let him do whatever, to show his true colors. And, you know, when we went on this trip to D.C., they told us that they were going to have National Guard to protect us. We don't have to worry. And we were invited to go there in a limousine to go to D.C. By Turning Point USA, we were invited. They sent a limousine, a bus, 2 buses for us to travel. And so we know that we were going to be protected. But Nancy Pelosi refused any help that Trump said, you're in control. I'm giving permission for you to have National Guard, 20,000. And she did not want it because they had it all well organized with this crook. But it's all going to be released. I hear a lot of you talking about that, but
we already
know
exactly
this. What's coming.
Because I know your theories. I know you have a different source of information.
It's not
but
theory.
We already know that the police were left out purposefully so they could put Trump supporters in the Capitol. We know the doors were left open. We've got the videos. We know the Capitol Hill police said, come on in. So this secret source, this secret information, this military intelligence, I don't buy it for a second. I don't think that's going to happen because if it was going to happen, it would have happened already. Okay. No, I'm on plan logic. I'm on plan reason. Anyway, hold on for that. We've only got a couple of minutes. Jonathan, is there anything more to your article or anything you can tell us about Stuart Rhodes before we get our new guest?
No, you can go on this, like I say, but the article, yeah. The main thing is that what they tried to hang on Donald Trump, if you actually look at it, mm-hmm. exonerates him. I mean, it's political. I mean, they're basically saying that how dare Donald Trump not agree with us? I mean, they show him outraged that he's being openly defied as president. Well, who wouldn't? And what kind of precedent does that set? And then it also, they're saying that they're just blaming him no matter what. It's like, whether he does one thing or whether he does the other thing, they just hate him.
Well, they hate more than him. They hate the idea of him. In other words, it's like what tyrants do when they want to erase you. You know, and Stalin, they not only did they kill you and send a bill to your family, but they took you out of the books. They erased the record that you ever existed. They're trying to do the same thing to Trump because they don't want another person coming along and challenging, you know, the primal forces. They don't want another person doing what Trump did. They don't want anybody thinking that anyone can be president unless they say who can be president, which is either a rhino like a Jeb Bush, you know, John McCain, Mitt Romney, who's supposed to lose to the Democrat, or occasionally put a Republican in just to sort of, you know, show that it's going to happen like a George Bush and then the elder. But that's it. Those are the people that get to be president as far as they're concerned. You know, Hillary was supposed to be president and Jeb was supposed to lose. And I'm not sure what's supposed to happen this time. I think this time Mike Pence is going to be the Republican nominee and he's supposed to lose to Hillary or whoever they put up front this time. You know, but they always have a plan and then Trump comes along and violates the plan. Well, that's the problem. They don't want anybody violating their plan. Anyway, let me play something here. I'm going to talk to my guests and get them on in about 5 minutes from now. Take a break.
I got to go. God bless you
okay.
guys.
Thanks, Chelsea.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I just disagree with what the whole plan she's talking about. I just don't think it makes any sense. Jonathan, thanks for coming back Monday. See if this time works for you, I'd love to have you on. And go get them. Go get help out the folks that need helping. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks.
All right. So I'll play a little bit here. Like I said, I'll get my guests on in a few minutes. Otherwise, I know what's going to happen. We're going to get caught for time like we would always do. So do a quick – let me see if I can play something a little bit – where's my – it's Annie Federalist. It's a bit long. Let's play the Federalist one. I'll play this one back in about – well, just a little bit of time here. Then we'll get our guest on. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Even the title of Federalist Number 12 is bad. The utility of the Union in respect to revenue. First of all, the Union was not created for Alexander Hamilton, who wrote Federalist Number 12, to rule it, nor was the Union created for his utility, nor for the Union to generate revenue. Hamilton says, "The prosperity of commerce is now perceived and acknowledged by all enlightened statesmen to be the most useful as well as the most productive source of national wealth, and has accordingly become a primary object of their political cares." Such grand assumptions. All enlightened statesmen? So those who disagree must be stupid by comparison. Commerce is supposed to bring wealth. That's why we engage in it. But commerce is for private wealth, entrepreneurial wealth, investor wealth, and more. It is not for governed national wealth unless the commerce is nationalized. Maybe that's what Hamilton had in mind when he talked about commerce becoming, quote, a primary object of their political cares. Hamilton and the Federalists appeared to believe that not only the Constitution and the federal government should serve elitists like himself, but the commerce of the nation should also. I can see why the anti-Federalists were so popular, and why people are encouraged by government to study only the Federalist Papers. Consider this paragraph. The ability of a country to pay taxes must always be proportioned in a great degree to the quantity of money in circulation and to the celerity with which it circulates. commerce contributing to both these objects must of necessity render the payment of taxes easier and facilitate the requisite supplies to the treasury. In other words, don't tax more than a certain portion of the money supply so taxes flow in easily. So the goal here is to tax not on the necessary expenditures of government, but on how great a proportion the federal government can tax to facilitate the supplies of money to the treasury most easily. It's also interesting that Hamilton does not trust the states at all regarding commerce or anything else, which is ironic because it's the states that delegate all power to the federal government through the Constitution. But Hamilton is so contemptuous of the states. He thinks their purpose is to conspire to commit commerce in a way the federal government could not tax. Again, according to Hamilton, like people, businesses are to serve the federal government. He says, "The relative situation of these states, the number of rivers with which they are intersected, and of bays that wash their shores, the facility of communication in every direction, the affinity of language and manners, the familiar habits of intercourse, all these are circumstances that would conspire to render an illicit trade between them a matter of little difficulty, and would ensure frequent evasions of the commercial regulations of each other." Stating things not at all in evidence, that they are in fact evident, Hamilton once again claims that only a national, not federal, national, as in a top-down supremacist government, can be trusted to collect the taxes and keep the treasury full. Whereas the states, which are sovereign entities, will break into confederacies and ruin all Hamilton's plans to run the economy with the national government. He concludes, "It is therefore evident that one national government would be able, at much less expense, to extend the duties on imports beyond comparison further than would be practicable to the states separately or to any partial confederacies." The only thing that is evident to me is that Alexander Hamilton wants a strong national government so his fellow elitists can control the economy and put away money in the treasury based on how much money they can get away with putting in the treasury and use for their own purposes. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium.
You make your energy drink yourself. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. All right, who says we don't have fun here? I'll get my volumes coordinated at some point. We'll get this all figured out. I'll just bring Pianki back in the conversation and make his line live, and he can join us. And we have a new guest, first-time caller and first-time guest here at Action Radio, Christopher Key, who came to my attention over just like 2 or 3 days ago, actually, because he sent me a message and said, guess what happened to me? I'm like, what happened to you? Well, I see this video. I'm like, well, that's interesting. Let's come on the show and talk about it. So here he is. So, Christopher, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Brother, I'm always fabulous. How are you guys doing today?
We're having a great time. Let's give him a little round of applause here for being on the show. So before we get into this remarkable assault that you had and the subsequent complicity with the, I guess it's the Baton Rouge police, let's tell a bit about yourself, sort of introduce yourself to our crowd here, because it sounds like you've done a little activism in your past, so you know, this isn't your first rodeo, as they say. Got a little background.
It's not my first rodeo.
Who's got the background?
Correct. Well, there's a lot in the background. I don't know how much time we have to go over that, but just so your listeners know a little bit about myself is I've been part of 4 national championships, 3 Super Bowls. I've been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I've been on 60 Minutes. I was banned by the NFL, the PGA, Major League Baseball, and the NCAA. Why? Because I help people without drugs, without chemicals, without surgery. And we did it on the largest scale ever known to mankind, so much so that the government came in 8 years ago, fined me hundreds of millions of dollars, seized everything I own, and I have a court order. I can't practice in my field for 10 years.
What's your
field?
What's your field?
Again, my background is in exercise physiology, kinesiology, and to tell you a little bit about my field is my greatest accomplishment in life is July 30th, 1998. That's when I became a father. And
congratulations.
That's when everything – Well, thank you so very much. Father of twins, okay?
Wow.
And my twins were born
time.
With the – no. My twins were born with one of the most rare diseases on the planet called phenylketonuria, otherwise known as PKU, where my twins will never eat protein. No milk, no chicken, no cheese, no fish, no birthday cake, no ice cream. Nothing that has protein will my twins ever eat. If they do, it becomes toxic, it goes straight to the brain, and causes one of the most extreme mental retardation there is. Anybody that has children, one of the first things they do to your children once they're born is they prick their foot. That is a PKU test, okay? And long as it's found out soon enough, they live perfectly normal lives with special restrictions on their diet. But if it goes undetected, it causes the most extreme mental retardation there is, okay? So because of their rare disease, Number one, I want to find a cure for their PKU, but God showed me the cure for cancer, for AIDS, for hepatitis, for TB. There really is no disease. But more importantly, I was shown that I had to test and prove all things that went to their body. Okay. Mm-hmm. When I went to the pediatrician nearly 24 years ago, and I told my pediatrician about my children and their PKU, he's like, "My goodness, I've only read about this in textbooks. I've never had a child that had PKU, much less two." Okay, and I said, "Well, Doc, can you show me information regarding these vaccines?" He said, "I'm glad you asked that, Mr. Key, because your children are part of this new schedule where they're going to get 72 vaccines before they're 18 years of age." And I'm like, "Wow, wow,
yeah,
Doc." I mean,
not my kids.
You know, I was like, I had like eight, you know, and I said, "Well, Doc, you know, can you give me a study to show me that schedule's safe?" And he said, "Sure, they're all over the place." I said, "Well, can I see one right now?" He said, "Right now." I was like, "Yeah, you're about to inject my children with these vaccines. I need to see some kind of, because I love randomized double-blind placebo studies with my background. I love to read the research." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Well, I can't get you one right now, but I'll have you one for the next appointment." So 7 days go by, and we come back in, and they have three shots out for my son and three shots out for my daughter. They're about to inject them, and I'm like, "Doc," I mean, the doc wasn't in there. The nurse was there. I'm like, "Ma'am, you know, where's Doc at?" Because he was supposed to give me, you know, the studies to show me that this new schedule is safe. So she goes and gets Doc. Doc comes in. He won't look at me, and he says, Christopher, there are no studies." And I'm like, "Dude, what?"
Well, at least he's honest.
But he says, "Christopher," well, he couldn't, you know, but see, the sad thing was, this was 24 years ago. He thought there was studies. He had no clue. He had no idea.
That's interesting. Okay, so he wasn't lying to you. He just didn't know.
He thought there were studies. I mean, because, I mean, if you talk to any of these pediatricians and medical doctors, they think there's all kinds of studies there, you know, and
assumptions are stronger than truth. Yeah, that's one of our rules around here, Chris. You'll find out the more Action Radio stuff you listen to. We go by logic and reason. If something doesn't make sense, you know, we're here to challenge it. Just because someone says it, just because they're an expert, has no validity with me whatsoever, because most things should be able to be proven by logic and reason. Same thing here, you know, with these vaccine things. You know, show me the evidence, show me that this works, show me how it's actually prevented what it is. In fact, the thing I just found out most recently, I still got background noise, so we got to mute the background noise, otherwise it's going to be on the podcast.
You got background noise? Yeah, can you hear me?
Well, I got one of your lines. Pianchi, is it your line? Let me mute Pianchi's line. See if that makes a difference. Maybe that took care of it. Okay, fine. Yeah, I'll bring it back in a little bit.
So are we good right now?
Well, I think we're fine as far as I know. But like I said, the background, it sounded like another conversation. And so, like I said, I don't want to have extra conversations, especially since people don't know that they're being podcast forever. So we can't have that. But the thing about these, you know, this vaccine schedule, you know, my daughter had, I think, maybe four total. And they wanted to give her 72. No, it's your line. Is there somebody talking on your line, or an extra phone or a conference call? Or do you have a computer in the background a YouTube going?
No, I got nothing going. I had you on my earbuds. Is that better? You're on speaker now. Is that better or no?
I don't hear the background noise, so whatever was on your earbuds, whatever extra conversation. You know, sometimes YouTubes play. We had, I think Pianchi has that, or Jonathan was mentioning that earlier sometimes. Anyway, I'll just let you know if we had that. But the doctors, let's get back to the arrogance of doctors. They don't know that they don't have studies. They give 72 vaccines because they're told to. They don't realize that they're just contributing to Big Pharma and making Big Pharma and the CDC rich with all the royalty agreements and everything else. There's no reason to do this. And what I just found out is that most of the diseases that they're vaccinating for don't exist in the United States anymore. That's fascinating. I mean, we have the polio, and that polio case that just came up in New York, this got off the story real fast. That's a vaccine-induced polio. That's not regular contagious, you know, polio bacteria, which is like E. coli. It's a fecal bacteria. You know, so it's the same kind of thing as E. coli. Yeah, go ahead. That's why I got the
swimming pools. Let's go into that because, you know, back in 98, you know, when Doc, you know, said, you know, "Christopher, you know, there are no studies," but he's like, "Christopher, you know, why are you going to act like this? Because they're being approved by the FDA, the CDC, the AMA. You know, mm-hmm. they have to be safe and effective. And I'm like, look, Doc, you know, you took an oath of office. I mean, an oath to do no harm. And this is something that's very interesting that you need to know is I thought they took an oath to do no harm. You did too, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't take the Hippocratic Oath, but I haven't read it for a while. And I don't know if it's – I don't think it says do no harm, if I remember the Hippocratic Oath. It actually says something completely different.
It's completely different. I just learned that two weeks ago. I was in Atlanta, Georgia, speaking with Maria Zach at her event, and I was
interviewing a
four-term Maria Zach is the whistleblower that blew the lid off of everything regarding the election of what was going on in Italy. If you haven't talked to her,
the servers that were sent over there, the ballots that were sent over there to be counted, that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. We've done a lot of work.
She's got all the
stuff. Yeah. Well, let's get her on the show. Bring her on sometime.
I'll take care of that for you. But Maria Zach had me at her thing to speak, and while I was there, I was interviewing a four-term congressman who was a medical doctor, and I'm telling this very story, and he's like, Christopher, do you know that since 1973, the medical doctors no longer take an oath to do no harm? And I'm like, no, there's no way. He said, yes. He said, you know what happened in 1973? I said, no, sir, what? He said, Roe versus Wade went into effect.
Hmm.
And when that went into effect, they could no longer say do no harm, because if they're doing abortions, they are doing harm. And that was taken out, and they do not take it any longer, which I found very, very interesting. But what I found more interesting is, you know, through my research in 1986, a lot of people don't know this, but Ronald Reagan passed the Vaccine Injury Act. Are you familiar with the Vaccine Injury Act?
Oh, listen, I'm the one who wrote the bill to put full product liability back on vaccine manufacturers. Yes, I'm familiar. But let me just make a quick note here, a little housekeeping note. It's pouring rain out there, so if we lose the signal, I'll restart the episode. Just call back in if we suddenly lose the signal. That happens periodically. Yeah,
beautiful.
Believe me, and as you get into what we do at writeyourlaws.com, you'll see we have two major bills that need publishing and sharing everywhere. One of them is our vaccine liability restoration bill, and the other is the one that fixes Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act so big tech can't censor anymore because we make their liability conditional. So we're doing some pretty cool stuff here. I think you'll like it.
I'd love to look into it more. So you guys understand that in 1986, Ronald Reagan passed the Vaccine Injury Act that exempt all vaccine companies of any and all liability. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you love to have a company?
Congress passed it, and I'm not sure how much it passed by, but it'd be interesting to check the contributions of Big Pharma to all the members of Congress who voted for it. Why did you sign it anyway? Do you know why Ronald Reagan signed that act? Was he under some kind of duress?
Yes,
do you think it was a good idea? A stupid idea.
Well, it was a very stupid idea, but he was told by the pharmaceutical companies that, look, you know, we've created all these wonderful vaccines that everybody thought was curing all these diseases, you know, but all these people are dying and we're being sued hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and we can't continue to manufacture this unless you exempt us of any and all liability. And if you don't exempt us of all liability, we're going to quit manufacturing this and all these people are going to die. And, you know, he had no clue. You know, he thought vaccines were the best thing since, you know, sliced bread, you know, and it just shows you how influential, you know, Big Pharma is, and all his cabinet members and Congress members are like, oh, my gosh, we can't allow this to happen. So the crazy thing is, you know, he exempted all the vaccine companies of any and all liability, but then he mandated that everybody buy their product. Wouldn't you love to have a company that the government said, look, I don't care what you do, who you kill, who you mang, they're exempt of all liability, but then we're also going to mandate that everybody buy your product. Wouldn't that be one heck of a company to own? Wouldn't you love to have one of those?
Well, they buy their product, but they mandated, like, the kids can't go to school without a certain amount of shots. People can't work in certain professions, especially health professions, with a bunch of stuff. So they make you buy it. Well, in a sense they did, but I just want to say, just in the accuracy of this, they really force it on the American public through mandates, even though they weren't called mandates
and
at the time. Yeah, yeah.
But,
I got the Hippocratic Oath
too,
if you're interested. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, just a couple of lines,
you know,
just to let – okay, you go ahead.
You know what happened in 2010? 2010
was created. I know that.
Okay, good. Not good, but yes. But what really happened in 2010 that your listeners need to know about was Wyatt versus Brusewicz. That was the U.S. Supreme Court case that ruled all vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. Did you hear what I just said? In 2010,
yep.
Wyatt versus Brusewicz, that all vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. And that basically said, if you guys are so stupid, if you're going to continue to inject your children with these bioweapons, then you deserve the death that may occur or the main or the damages that's going to occur to you and your children. Because
so
we've just
court,
told you.
Which court heard this? And I'm trying to get the jurisdiction here.
The U.S. Supreme Court. This
okay,
went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So who are the parties involved?
Wyatt.
Wyatt, and who is the other party?
Wyatt, Brusewicz. Just Google Wyatt versus Brusewicz, 2010, and you'll pull
how
that case up.
How do you spell Brusewicz? B-R-Y?
The head, I'm dyslexic, ADHD, LD, and everything else.
Oh, me too. Don't worry about it. I understand. That's why I'm asking the question. The reason I want to know is what is the issue? Because the Supreme Court usually doesn't – they come out with either a place where it's in the Constitution or a place of a statute. What was being challenged in that case?
Basically, this was the crutch for the vaccine injury court, okay?
Okay.
And the vaccine injury court was paying out, you know, millions and millions of dollars. Once Reagan ruled in 1986, the vaccine injury court was put into place, and basically everything had to go through the vaccine injury court. But then they were still able to take these cases and still continue to sue. But then when Wyatt versus Brusewicz went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, that made it null and void that you can no longer go outside the vaccine injury court and sue these pharmaceutical companies unless they committed fraud. And that's a whole other thing I'm working on right now, because I have all the evidence to prove that they are committing fraud still and that we can still sue them. And that's why I sent out over 100 letters to every one of the 100 senators.
Well, what is
over
your 100... basis of what is your basis of suit then? Because this is interesting. On what legal grounds can you sue?
If you read the 2010 U.S. Supreme Court case ruling, it basically exempts and says that all vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. Okay, and that you can
okay.
no longer sue them unless
well, this
unless they commit
make sense.
Fraud.
The court ruled that something's unsafe, but you can't sue? That doesn't make sense. Pianki, go ahead.
Supreme Court has no authority to make that type.
This is
why
I'm
like making a law.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
The Supreme Court can do is hear argument between two parties.
I mean, well, we know they do things they're not supposed to do, like Roe v. Wade, gay marriage, things like that. We know they make stuff up. But my question is, on what basis was this? Was it a constitutional challenge? Was it a statutory challenge? You know, on what basis did they, say that you couldn't sue, even though they ruled that something's dangerous? You know, you would think if they ruled it dangerous, they would have a recall. They'd have a product recall, or they order something, or they would make a recommendation that Congress do a recall. There's something not right here. There's something missing. We're missing some of the puzzle. And I'm going to switch off this in a second anyway, because this isn't what we originally intended to talk about. So we're gonna go to your other thing, then we can come back to this if we get some time.
Okay. Well, let me put one last thing in there because
sure.
It's so important. Because in 2018, Robert Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree sued HHS Human Health Services to release the safety studies. Okay. See, Ronald Reagan in 1986 said, "Look, you know, if we're going to exempt all the vaccine companies of any and all liability, and we're going to mandate that everybody purchase the product, you know, to go to school and whatnot, then we have to hold them accountable. So how we're going to hold them accountable is we're going to make them do safety studies, okay? But it'd be way too much of a trouble to make them do safety studies every year. So we're going to make them do safety studies every other year, okay? So they sued to have these safety studies released in 2018. Guess how many safety studies they had done since?
Well, none.
1986.
I'll tell you right now, none.
Zero.
They don't want,
nada.
They don't, yeah, because they don't want safety studies. No. But the thing is, because they have no civil liability, they don't have to do safety studies because they don't have to prove anything. They're never taken to court. This is why my bill changes that, because they'll be in court
but
you know,
again,
tomorrow. Go ahead.
But again, they tell us on the televisions that they're safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
we've done
and American people and people.
Just to hold you up, we've done shows on this for 2 years. So I want to know, I want to get beyond, you know, because you don't have to convince us. You don't have to convince our audience. Or, and you know, they're with us. Okay. So what specifically do you want to do? How do you want to fix this? Let's go to that.
Okay. Well, what I do is I have one letter that I need your listeners' help. And you can go to my website, vaccine-police.com. And
okay.
On that website, I have a letter that I need help because I'm one man trying to serve this to any and every medical doctor in the world that basically gives them 11 undeniable facts regarding any and all vaccines, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's once this medical doctor has served this document, he no longer has plausible deniability. And if he doesn't disclose those 11 undeniable facts to his patients, and then that patient takes that bioweapon, and then that patient dies, we then can hold him accountable criminally and civilly. We can hold him criminally liable for murder, and then we can hold him civilly liable for the death of that child. But more importantly, and this is the kicker, is I've also served this same letter in a different form to all 100 senators, 100 of the House of Representatives, the president, the vice president, Ferret Fauci, Mr. Biden, so on and so forth. So this is how, you know, we take action. I'm all about taking action and giving solutions.
Oh,
and,
I am
you know,
too.
I'm the guy that has
that's what the whole show's
that, that has
now. But wait a minute, let me hold you up for a second. Doesn't malpractice cover exactly what you're talking about? If a patient is murdered or killed by negligence or criminal negligence or things they should have known, that comes under malpractice. That's already covered by law.
Again, this letter takes away all the plausible deniability because the American Pediatrics Association sent out a letter nearly 15 years ago saying, look, you know, you got all these crazy people now that are no longer wanting to take these bioweapons, and, you know, we need you guys to protect yourself. And in order to protect yourself, you know, you guys have to show them how they need to take these bioweapons, make a document of it. But in the same letter, it showed that they need to show them all the information of how they are safe, but then also all the terrible things that could be done. And
okay, well,
in
well
that letter,
why, what's so magic about this letter? Who signed it and endorsed it? Do you have groups that have signed this letter? Who's behind it?
No. I'm behind it.
Who wrote it?
I did.
Okay. So how does it have force of law then? How does it get rid of plausible deniability?
Again, it doesn't it's 11 undeniable facts regarding all vaccines.
Well, give me one of them.
U.S. Supreme Court ruled that all vaccines are unavoidably unsafe.
Okay.
That is one of the main ones.
Okay. Give me another one.
Again, now you're telling me to read off the 11. I don't have the
letter.
Well,
you wrote it. You wrote it. I can't remember. Come on. Give me one or two more. I'm curious. I'm not against you. I admire what you're doing. Don't get me wrong. But this is what I do. I want to find out. I want the details because that's what we do. You know, we love the details.
Correct. Again, with my disability and whatnot, it's unless I knew, I'd have to pull the letter up. Go to my website and you can pull it up and read the.
Okay.
Can you get one of your guys to pull it up?
One of my staff. Yeah, I'll ask my office. Hang on. Let me get back to No, I mean, I am the staff pretty much, except for the wonderful folks that call in, all my reporters and things like that. But it's just there's something missing here. There's something, I think, if you wrote the letter, and I'm not questioning your credentials at all, but I don't see how this would work unless you get with America's Frontline Doctors, if you get with some of the folks that are out there with Del Bigtree, and get with Robert Kennedy Jr. of Children's Health Defense. You know, put some groups behind you. If it's just
again,
you and your lone voice.
You got to start somewhere, okay?
I know.
And,
I've started Action Radio
gotten
from nothing, so believe me, I know. You're not talking to someone that isn't doing what you're doing. I'm just curious about it.
Again,
okay.
This is something that I started myself, and we've been able to go and trying to get other people to serve. Oh,
I just want to find out about
again,
it.
Again, you know.
Yeah. In other words, why would a doctor do this? Why would a doctor say, "I'm going to take your letter, I'm going to sign your letter, and now I know that
they're not signing the letter. We are serving them the letter, certified and registered. Okay.
Okay.
I've spent over $15,000 on sending these letters, certified and registered, to these medical doctors.
What's the response?
What's the response been? Nothing. But the cool thing is I'm keeping a list. I have a list of all those medical doctors that have been served. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of time before one of those medical doctors has been served this letter, and then that medical doctor gives that bioweapon to one of his patients, and that patient dies. And then
is it admissible in court? Have you checked the legality of your letter? Is it enforceable?
I mean, I would think it would be, but again, I'm not a lawyer.
Okay. Have you talked to a lawyer then?
I've talked to many lawyers, and they all seem to think that, you know, I've got a long row ahead of me. But again, you know, one of the things I have had happen with quite a few medical doctors is they've read this letter and they had no clue. And then now they've begun to do more research. It's all about education. Knowledge is power. Okay.
Well,
knowledge is power. And, you know, all these medical doctors have no clue of the ill effects of all the bioweapons. They have no idea.
Well,
you know, they have no idea.
That might have been true a few years ago, but given what's happening now with the COVID shots, with all the athletes that are dying, there's a 35-year-old football player that Hall of Fame or not, but just died. People are dying all the time.
Notre Dame.
You look at celebrities I think Ivana Trump probably got a COVID jab. Probably got tons of them. And she was apparently very paranoid about disease. So they know. You know, and so that's what I'm saying is I think the work that you're trying to do has already been done. I'm just wondering about the efficiency of carrying on unless you have some kind of backing behind you, either legal, a group like maybe Heritage Foundation, America's Frontline Doctors, you know, the Stanford, the Hoover Institute. I mean, you need somebody behind you to do this. I mean, I'm looking for
that goes into attorneys, and, you know, attorneys work for the Queen, and, you know, they've taken that oath to the Queen, and they don't care anything about us. You know,
what's the oath?
What's the oath they took
to the Queen?
We don't have enough time to go over all that.
Give me the basics. I mean, give me the Cliff Note version. What oath do they take to the Queen?
Your bar attorneys, they have a license, okay?
Right.
And their allegiancy is not to we the people. Their allegiancy is to their bar association. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you take on an attorney, we don't have time. You said we only had an hour. Okay. What do you know about being sovereign to God?
Now we're way off topic, but I don't know. Tell me, how do we be sovereign to God?
Well, you understand statutes and codes, correct?
Uh-huh. Yep, I write them.
Okay. Now, do you understand that you don't need a driver's license to travel?
I understand there's a right to travel, and I understand that the state enforces a driver's license, and they call it a privilege, and that's not true. I do understand that.
Okay, and again, you don't have to have a driver's license to travel, and there's
right.
been many U.S. Supreme Court rulings on this,
mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, the only person that needs a driver's license is somebody that is committing commerce, like a truck driver, a bus driver, an Uber driver, so on and so forth. You know, you and I, you know, we're granted our constitutional rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and they can't, you know, put a fee on that. And mm-hmm. that's what people don't understand. And all these statutes and codes, because, see, I follow mm-hmm. God's law. As long as I don't harm the hair on another man or woman's head, I'm all good. All these other statutes and codes are nothing but making money. You know, there has to be a damaged party, okay? You know, just like I've been arrested three times now for trespassing.
I want to get to the incident. Let's get to the incident that just happened to you. So describe what you're trying to accomplish, and let's hear the story. Because I post the story from the news channel that reported on you. So let's talk about that. And then tell me
okay.
what so you end up in an abortion clinic. Now, what were you trying to accomplish? And I mean, I'm curious. I find it fascinating that this woman comes out and beats you with a stick. That's interesting. That, did she hurt you and injure you
not
at all?
Yeah, she did. She gave me a concussion. She gave me a torn rotator cuff and gave me a hernia. So, it was not a laughing matter, laughing when this was happening.
Then I thought, okay, so that's different. Well, tell me the story. Tell me how you came to be there, what you're trying to accomplish, and then what happened. And then we'll talk about the police, too.
Beautiful. Well, real quick, the vaccine police, I create the vaccine police after the government gave me exempt me from practicing my field for 10 years. Okay. So that was 8 years ago. So 2 years ago, when all this COVID thing started to happen, I created the vaccine police because I knew they were going to come after us and they were going to police us to make us take this bioweapon. So I tried to get out in front of this and police them, to hold the CDC accountable, to hold the AMA accountable, to go into pharmacists and serve them these documents. You can read the Washington Post article where I go into pharmacists now and they physically close their doors when they see me coming because my paperwork is so powerful, okay? Hmm. And they don't want to be served these documents. I'm the guy that has billboards all across the country saying vaccines kill. So we began to police these organizations. I ended up having to police the border. I spent nearly almost 6 weeks at the border in Arizona. I've had to police libraries now because there's porn in our libraries.
How do you police the border? I'm kind of curious. That's interesting.
Well, there's an organization I was working with called Veterans on Patrol, and I went down to see what they were doing and to see how I could bring attention to this so we can get more people down there because our borders are completely, totally open. And right. While I was there, we were literally negotiating with the cartel to get these women and children released because they're using the women and children as kind of dummies so that they can then send their drugs and whatnot across the border. They're a diversion to get the Border Patrol to come, and then on the other side or in front of them, they send all their drugs and whatnot. I mean, it's a very interesting operation, but again, nobody knew much about this. Nobody was talking about this. So, I began to police the border. I try to bring attention to what mainstream won't talk about. We try to steer the narrative, so we force them. That's why I put these billboards up so that anything they weren't talking about on the television, we would put it up in light. So we would force the narrative. But going back to the abortions, I didn't know anything about abortions except for my mom and dad taught me that abortion was wrong. Okay, and I never really studied it, but when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, at that same conference I was at 2 weeks ago, I met this woman named Jennifer, and she was telling me how she had an abortion when she was 15 years of age, forcibly.
Yeah, no last names. We're gonna protect these folks.
I didn't say her last name. I just said.
I know, but I just want to warn you that unless they're a public official, we're gonna keep certainly. I would even keep first names out, just to be on the safe side. Yeah.
Well, she went public. She did an interview, so she said I could use her first name because she shows her whole face. But anyway, she talks about forcibly having to take an abortion and then began to become an advocate against abortion, and so much so that she was arrested by the Clintons. She was put in prison for 2 years. Okay, and an interesting part of this story is while she was in prison, she was working on suicide watch. Okay. And while she was on suicide watch, she saw James McDougal. Do you know who James McDougal was?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Rose Law Firm.
Well, she – do what?
I think it's Rose Law Firm, if I remember. Part of the Clinton administration.
And yes, James and Susan McDougal. And I've confirmed this. James and Susan McDougal was at the same prison she was at, and she was watching – on suicide watch, and she watched James McDougal be presented with medication, and he refused it, and then the goon squad came in, forced him to take this medication, and 30 minutes later, she watched him pass away. Then she goes back to her cell, and guess who her new cellmate is?
In prison, was
Susan
in James
McDougal.
Cell. Susan McDougal. Oh, that's interesting. So anyway,
she goes on to educate me about abortions, and I didn't know this, but at 40 weeks, they can birth the child, and as long as they do not bring the head out of the vagina, they can then turn the baby face down and they can slice the back of the neck.
Okay, I don't want to go into. I don't want to. We know how that works. I don't want to go into that. I mean, it's disgusting.
I know,
it's terrible. Talk about it.
It's beyond disgusting.
So,
I
want
to
know what happened.
I didn't know anything
you.
About.
You're still not getting to what happened to you in the clinic, which is
okay,
why
okay, perfect.
I asked to come
perfect.
On the show.
Okay, let me go.
So come back to it.
Again, I'm coming back to it. So anyway,
no good graphic
she educates me about a. I won't. Okay,
right,
no
so,
more graphic.
Right,
so
now
she's
you know.
Educating
okay,
me about
so let's. So tell me what.
Okay,
so,
let me.
So,
okay.
All right.
So
skip
so
all that
she's
part.
Educating me about abortion, and Roe versus Wade passes. Okay, Roe versus Wade passed that basically says abortions are now illegal. And it's to the state to decide. Okay.
So no, people no, don't you're, know you're confusing Louisiana, people. Roe v. Wade was repealed. Basically, the
reverse,
Supreme Court
I'm sorry.
Abolished that.
Gotcha.
Reverse. There we go. That's better. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. All right. So you said it was
reverse,
passed. I'm,
and
I thought you were back
to
in 73. So now it goes back to the state. Okay.
Go.
Keep going.
Okay. So it was reversed and it mm-hmm. put it back to the state. Okay. And in Louisiana, people don't know this, but when President Trump said drain the swamp, he wasn't talking about D.C. He was talking about Louisiana. Louisiana is evil upon evil. It's crazy. This is some other things I've learned. But anyway, in Louisiana in 2020, for all the guys to get and girls to get elected, they ran on the policy or the platform that if Roe versus Wade was ever overturned, they would immediately put into place a trigger law that would make all abortions illegal. Okay. And none of them ever thought Roe versus Wade would ever get overturned. Okay. So they got overturned and these abortion clinics in Louisiana said, we don't care. You know, we're above the law. We're going to continue to abort these children because we make billions of dollars off of these children. So, the attorney general wrote all the abortion clinics a letter saying that if they didn't stop, they were going to be prosecuted for homicide. So the Monday before the 4th of July was the last abortion they did. They did no more abortions Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Monday was the 4th of July. Tuesday, I get a phone call from my friend saying, Christopher, they're back performing abortions. And I'm like, okay.
Now, what
so
were they ordered
the phone,
not to do? Was this a governor's order, or what? Or the Louisiana law went into effect? What exactly happened? What was the change
right.
in Louisiana?
In Louisiana, mm-hmm. in 2020, they passed legislation that they signed into law that said if Roe versus Wade was ever overturned, immediately mm-hmm. that all abortions would be illegal. It was what's
okay.
called a trigger law. Okay, it was
right.
a trigger
law
that immediately.
Sorry. Okay, so
okay.
it takes effect.
So it,
all right. Didn't have to be signed.
So,
didn't
so
have to be done again. It was
done.
You know,
finished.
So the previous
it was
governor signed it or didn't need
no,
any
the
legislative anything? Current governor signed
it. The current governor signed this, and everybody signed off on it in 2020 in Louisiana. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So when Roe versus Wade was overturned, that trigger law immediately went into effect.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And these abortion clinics said they didn't care, and they continue to do these abortions. So the attorney general wrote a letter that I'll send to you saying that if you didn't stop this, that this trigger law was now law and that you guys will be prosecuted. So they stopped it for nearly 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
But then some judge said he was going to have a hearing, okay, on July the 8th. And attorney general said, you know, I don't care about no hearing, great and wonderful, but this trigger law is in effect, and if you guys, you know, continue to do any more abortions, you're going to be prosecuted for murder.
Mm-hmm.
So they stopped, but then on Tuesday after 4th of July, they started up at the Delta Clinic in Baton Rouge. So I call the Delta Clinic, and I get confirmation that they are still doing abortions.
Mm-hmm.
So I drive from Birmingham, Alabama, all the way to Baton Rouge, and I have a copy of that letter. And I present it to the security guard outside and tell him, look, you need to make sure the doc and all the staff knows about this.
He's the guy in the video with the white T-shirt and the gun?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
So
let's tell folks where they can find this story. So if anybody wants – this is well worth watching. So what was the channel that reported it? And let's give the website so people can find the story just in case they want to take a look at this. Where was it reported?
I know. Yeah, it was. I sent you the link. It was on CBS Baton Rouge.
Well, I'll find it.
I sent you the link. I sent you the link on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll find it.
Anyway, I present this letter because, again, everything I do with the vaccine police is out of love, okay? You know, we never want violence in any form or the fashion. You know, we're all about the power of the pen of the First Amendment right of free speech, okay? And the last thing I wanted to have happen is these people all go to jail, you know, because, hey, you know, maybe they were so stupid and they didn't know, you know. So I wanted to present these documents, and I did, and I proceed to walk around the clinic, and I get recordings of every one of their license plates because I wanted to know who was there because we witnessed five women go into the clinic and five women leave, okay? So my assumption is that they all had abortions, and that was murder, okay?
Well,
and I also
you can't
have evidence.
Assume that, though. I mean,
again, I can assume
clinic.
Anything I want. I mean,
here's my question though. I mean, you know, you've got a camera. I've seen the video. Just to let folks know, okay, this is the website is WAFB 9. So it's WAFB Channel 9. The story is by Chris Rosato, R-O-S-A-T-O, and it's published July 6th. And it's Baton Rouge, Louisiana, WAFB. And then you can see you got a picture, you got a video here. So there's a black woman in a purple scrub suit with a wooden rod in her left hand and something else, I guess, looks like some kind of disc thing in her right hand. Oh, that looks like a three-hole puncher. Yeah, that's so she's armed, okay? And so this is an obvious attack by an armed employee who attacked Chris. And this is, you know, and this is, you got to see the video, okay? So we're not just making this stuff up. It's right here. It's all on video. Pretty easy to see. I didn't know you were injured that badly, though. So she whacked you with a three-hole punch. And then they said that she wasn't there. You know, let's pick it up from the security guard. So you walk up there. You've taken, I don't know if you can take pictures of people's license plates. I mean, that may be an invasion of privacy. I'm not sure. That's something to do.
Again, put me in jail for it, brother. That is for my safety and whatnot. Okay. So. But anyway, I walk around the abortion clinic, and as I'm walking around the abortion clinic, I meet this young woman who's standing outside the abortion clinic who says she comes there every day to pray and that she just heard a baby scream, and then there was silence. And she actually testified that evening at the Baton Rouge City Council, okay? Mm-hmm. So anyway, I walk back up to the security guard and wanted to make sure that he had served the document or at least given the document to the nurses and to the doctor. And you can see this woman sitting down in scrubs asking me what hospital would I like to go to. So now she's premeditated and whatnot. And I told her, you know, I'll go to any hospital.
I thought she was standing up. She's there with weapon in hand. Now the security guard, just to me, she doesn't have a uniform. The security guard's wearing jeans and a white shirt and having a gun, not in a regular holster like a police holster, but a regular, you know, concealed holster, like an inside the waistband holster. Was this security guard employed by this abortion clinic or a private security, or who is he? I'm just curious. Then we'll get to the woman.
Again, you know, I don't know that information, but what I do know in Baton Rouge is he was breaking a law. He has to be in uniform and whatnot, and that, number one, is a violation of law, which the police did nothing about, which they broke many laws that day. So this woman is sitting down. She then stands up, comes outside, opens the door, hits me directly square in the head, you know, knocks my camera. I always carry three cameras with me to make sure I record everything. She knocked one of my cameras off my chest, and then she picks my phone up, walks back inside, and shatters it. And then turns around and comes back a second time and hits me a second time with the billy stick in the shoulder. Okay.
This is all on video if anybody wants to check it out. Yeah, it's all there. It's all recorded.
You know, what happened with this is when I realized that they were doing abortions, I called up the attorney general's office to let them know that I had a clinic that I knew was doing abortions and, you know, what do we need to do? And the attorney general's office told me to call the sheriff, to call the police. So I called the sheriff. I called the police. Mm-hmm. They said there was nothing they could do about it, and I was on my own. So that was when I went to the clinic, served them. And then when I got assaulted, I called 911. The police come. I show them the video of what happened. They then proceed to walk inside the abortion clinic, and then they come back out, and they tell me that the woman that assaulted me was not in the building, that she was not an employee. Okay.
This is the one wearing the purple scrubs that looks like an employee. Now, she doesn't have a badge on. She doesn't have this place obviously doesn't have an ID on the uniform. She doesn't have a name tag that I can see. She doesn't have a badge or a crest of the place. There's no identifying marks on her whatsoever, which is
correct. But we know for a fact her name is Teresa Carter. She's had incidents with the police. Or actually with the pedestrians.
Didn't we just say about mentioning last names? I just asked you a while ago.
This is mentioned in the story. They mentioned her name in the story on the CBS. Her name is written in the story, okay?
Okay, that's fine then. Just want to make sure.
It's written in the story because the police go on to say that they don't know who it is and that she's not in the building.
So you're right. Okay, my mistake. I apologize. But then it says she was taken into custody. So it was charged with aggravated assault and criminal damage.
Stop. Nothing happened that day. Okay, that day nothing happened. Zero happened. They said she was not there. That they didn't know who she was. And gave me a case number. I proceeded to leave. I then called up all the local news stations, and let me go back. I talked to the Attorney General's office, and I tell them what happens, and they said, "Look, you." Or to have homicide come down there, you need to tell the officers that they are to call homicide, and if they don't, they're aiding and abetting. So I gave them the number and said the Attorney General said that you guys are to call homicide. They got in their car, and they drove away. So I then call all the local news stations. I go to the local police station that morning. I stay from 8 o'clock that morning till 5 o'clock that evening, trying to file a complaint with homicide, telling them that I suspect 5 murders happened the other day that I was and about 4-something, somebody from Internal Affairs comes out, sticks his head outside the door and says, "Mr. Key," and I said, "Yes, sir." He gives me a letter and says, "This is our attorney. You're to contact them." So while I'm there, CBS shows up. They do the story. And only because of that story, the next day, they supposedly go to the clinic and they give her a summons. The woman that allegedly assaulted me was not arrested. she was
video?
Given a summons.
Who's on video? Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. The crazy thing is,
I'm so glad I recorded everything because CBS did the actual story. ABC wrote a story, and I'll send you that story, where they say that I tried to go into the clinic and that basically this woman was defending herself against me.
No, I don't see any evidence of that. I mean, I've seen the video. Like I say, you're clearly outside the clinic.
And I handed it to him outside, and this woman comes out of the inside to attack me, but ABC wrote a story saying that I tried to go into the clinic, and this woman was basically
white supremacist terrorist. You're going to get all that kind
of stuff. Who knows? What? I mean, that's why I record everything, brother.
Yeah. Now, how does this work exactly for people that want to do what you're doing? What kind of, is it like a dash cam or just a regular cell phone? How do you do this? And what do you, does it go on Facebook or do you just make a recording of it and then transfer it somewhere? Because I've tried making videos and they're usually too big to display on social media. So how does one do this? Give us a little inside information.
What I have is I have a 360 GoPro and then I have my iPhone that I usually do everything live from, and I'm able to go live on Telegram and on Facebook. And then I have another hidden cam. I have another hidden cam just to record as backup because, it's a matter of time before people take my first two cameras and then that information disappears. And that camera is going to another live feed that is being recorded. So even if they were to find that third camera, the video recording is off somewhere safe.
Okay. So we've got just about a minute or so left. So let's kind of sum up. So what has been the result of this? Any other legal action? And what are you looking to have happen?
With this is we're in the process of suing the clinic, suing the woman that took place, and the reason why we're doing the suit because then we get to subpoena the records, and then we can see that abortions happened that day, and then we can file criminal charges for murder against everybody that was involved. So
is the district attorney
right,
or the attorney general going to be filing charges, or because you can't file charges yourself?
Right. Well, but that's why, you know, I had to go through all this because I have to get a complaint, you know, by homicide, and they will not give me, you know, that they don't want this to be able to become a complaint because they're protecting the abortion clinic. They're all in on it. I've never seen the corruption that I've seen like I have in Baton Rouge. You know, a lot of people don't know that Dumbbell Edwards, the governor, who I went down to Baton Rouge, I mean to Louisiana, nearly 8 months ago, was wanting to mandate that every child in Louisiana take the bioweapon. Not even California had they mandated everybody take the COVID vaccine. And we had to testify before the committee. And when we went in there, it was unanimous that they were going to vaccinate all of God's children. But then when we left, because the testimonials and testimony that I and Robert Kennedy Jr. gave and all the other medical doctors and medical experts.
Robert Kennedy Jr.? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know Robert. Anyway.
We have to go. So what I want you to do, let's get your website again. If people want the letter, if they're interested, let's get your website and any other contact information, Facebook groups, things like that. Don't do stuff like personal cell phone. I don't want people calling you, but whatever you want to do.
No, you don't understand. My personal cell phone number is everybody. I give it out on every show around the country.
All right, well, in that case, give your phone calls and we're fine with that. Yeah, okay, go for it.
Got you.
And then we have to go.
Anybody out there wants to get more involved, that we need vaccine posses all across the country to hold these satanic Luciferians accountable, my website is vaccine-police.com. That's vaccine-police.com. Or you can give me a call at 205-936-9803. 205-936-9803, brother.
Yeah, and it'll be podcast, so people will be able to get it. Christopher, interesting story. Like I say, I just always ask questions just because I want to know the details. And,
you didn't learn anything.
Yeah. I learned a ton of things. Oh, did you say you learned things?
No, the only way to learn things is to ask questions. You know,
yeah,
so,
that's for sure.
You know, the most ridiculous question is the one never asked.
No, we don't have to worry about that here. I'll ask it. Hey, listen.
There we go. I love it.
You take care. Get healed and get healthy. And watch out for people wielding weapons. That's not good.
Not good at all, brother.
Take care, Christopher.
All right, love you guys. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
And that'll do it for today. Greg Pangloss here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is www.writeyourlaws.com. If you want to help us out here and be a contributor, paypal.com/paypalme/actionradio. I really like to have sponsors, though. Corporate sponsors, donors, folks that want to have some advertising and tell us what you do, then please do that as well. You can contact me at greg@writeyourlaws.com, writeyourlaws. And let's do this again tomorrow, 7 o'clock a.m. Central Time, and we'll have new guests, new reports, new all kinds of stuff. Shelby's back, so we'll get a little cruise and travel report, and then we'll go on with our usual Tuesday fare, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.